Welcome to Today with Jared James. And now, your host, Jared James.
God.
It's a train wreck.
Oh, man.
Just in general.
Oh, my God. Does he still look like he towers over me?
Yes.
I'm taller than you.
Yeah.
That's Why good. Is that happening?
Because I think he's closer to the camera.
Oh, my God. Well, I think we've officially started.
We have.
That is the beginning there. So I just want to state for anybody watching this on YouTube, okay, we're either face-to-face or I'm bigger.
I'm 6'2".
Yeah, you are not 6'2". But for whatever reason, this view is giving you a
dominance.
I'm
exerting my dominance
viewpoint.
On you.
That's exactly right. So hey everybody, welcome to episode 101 of Today with Jared James. Today it's not only with Jared James, we have a very special guest who was not able to make it today. So no, but we of course have our normal Mr. Tom.
Hello.
The producer.
I'm here.
Hey, Tom.
I am here. Okay.
Am here.
Is your mic on this time?
It is.
Okay, awesome. And
it might
then,
be a little bit low, but it's on.
I am joined by a longtime friend. Mr. James, we're calling you. I've never called you James.
Yeah, James is my official name.
No,
yeah.
No, I've never called you that in my life.
Nope.
Jim Burgers.
That's
this
right.
would be a good. This would be a good time to actually ask. Am I saying it right, Burgers?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
okay. You've waited this long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when do you really care? Like, you know what I mean? Like, when do you say someone's last name? Actually,
fair.
All the time.
Yeah. When you were in school, you would always say, "Hey, Burgers or James."
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, now I get the James. Like, people think it's my first name.
Sure.
Because of people like you who have the first name James.
That's right.
Which I don't appreciate.
You can call me King James.
Yeah, you're not thinking King James. People are just like, I didn't think James was a last name.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? LeBron? Rick? I am right in the same thing. All right.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I'm joined by Jim Burgers, a longtime friend. For any of you that have seen pictures from vacations or anything like that, the Jamburskis. They probably won't see you in those pictures because I ask you to take them.
That's right.
So you're out of those pictures.
Few and far between.
Yeah, exactly.
I make it in one.
But no, you're one of the families that we go with. I always joke around because I've known your kids since birth. And I always joke around about...
Actually, in utero.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bad time to tell you, but one of them might be mine.
Okay. Well, we won't say that.
Yeah, right.
Publicly.
Yeah, publicly. But your older daughter, you don't have a younger daughter, but the older one is your daughter, Katie.
Very good.
Katie's like my daughter, and I used to always tell her, I think I remember saying to her one time, I said, so how's your father going to handle it when I walk you down the aisle? And she goes, I have two arms. And I'm like, that's my girl.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. She's pretty good with that.
Yeah, she is. She's quick like that, yeah. No doubt about it. Anyway, so pleasure to have you on here. We'll probably have some fun. As you guys can tell, Jim and I know each other a little bit. You're actually, I probably talk to you more than most because I'm terrible. I'm a terrible friend, so everybody knows. I'm a terrible friend. I'm not good at calling. I swear Jim has like a reminder on his phone to like remind you to like check in or like whatever, because you're good with the check-ins.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I try to be a good friend, unlike you.
I didn't say it was good. You said thank you. I wasn't done. I didn't say it was a good thing. Right. It wasn't a compliment. No, but it is true, though. How do you do that, by the way? Because I'll get, as a lot of you know that listen to this, like I travel a lot, I do whatever. You're like pretty, like, you know, like with the check-ins. Hey, just checking in, man. What's going on? Is it like, what does that? Is it a thought, or do you actually have like a reminder in your phone?
Yeah, no, I think it's just a thought. I mean, throughout the day, if somebody comes into my brain, I try to reach out.
How many
out,
people do you do that with?
Not many, honestly.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say, like, all day long.
No.
All right.
Yeah, not too many, so consider yourself fortunate.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. So we spend a lot of time together. Like I said, we do vacation. We've known each other for a long, long time. I always say nobody makes me laugh like Jim. I mean, we act like idiots together. Let's be honest. Well, sometimes I leave, like, we just left vacation, and I look back, and I go, for everybody who's at that vacation with me, if they think that's me, we just... literally act like idiots.
Well, one of us does.
Well, come on, it's not true.
No, it's true. We like to have fun.
Oh my God. Yeah, nobody makes me laugh like Jim. But I wanted to bring you on here, not just because, you know, of that, but you've got a pretty good story that I think people would relate to. You know, you've got, we'll get into it, but you've got a lot of real estate investments. You've got some other investments in other companies and those kinds of things. And yet you still work full time and do all of that. And so I want to talk a little bit. I want to get into that stuff at some point because I think it's really helpful for people as far as how do they take that next step and get into that. But before I do that, I want to hear a little bit about like childhood. So you've been with your wife, Sarah.
Her name is Sarah.
Sarah, okay. I'm not really sure what you're correcting right now. How long have you and Sarah been together?
Well, listen, before I get started, I just want to thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, boy.
You know, for allowing me to mentor you and guide you, you know, throughout your career.
Is this forced mentorship?
It's been really good, you know.
Wow.
So I've seen you start from zero and now be a hero, Jared.
Did you just take public credit as being my mentor?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I've known you for a long, long time.
Well, there's a lot of people who know me for a long time.
That's right, yeah. Well, listen, when I see an opportunity, I try to seize it.
Wow. So well, thank you,
I just
mentor.
Wanted that on record.
Thank you. Can I make direct eye contact?
Yes.
My mentor? Okay. No, I am looking forward to this. But you guys, okay, so you and your wife. So
yeah.
Obviously, your wife and I joke around. She calls me her Connecticut brother.
Sure.
Which, I mean, it should just be brother. But but either way, you guys have been together for a long time.
We have. Actually, high school sweethearts.
Okay.
You know, I was fortunate, you know, to know her actually since middle school, believe it or not.
Okay.
So we always chuckle, but the story goes she was kind of eyeing me, which I was very appreciative
Makes
of.
Sense.
Yeah,
Makes
yeah.
sense.
Not really, but that's what she tells me.
Come on.
You know, and
I fight it every day, Jim.
So, yeah, I mean, there was one day in high school, she reached out, no cell phones, right? The old dial phones, right?
Can you imagine that?
And she called me.
Just so you know, that's not a dial.
Yes, it is.
That's a dial.
Oh, yeah, no.
What, is that a rotary, the other one?
Rotary phone.
Is this the other one?
Yeah. We couldn't afford the push button.
Okay.
You know? So I come home, and my mom says, hey, a girl called. And I was like, wow.
Probably excited.
Yeah, exactly. This is her first time. So.
Yeah.
I had to call her back. Of course, she couldn't remember the number. So, I tracked her down, called her back, and
God, the old days.
Yeah, the old days.
Leaving messages and doing.
Yeah.
And then, so you've been together since then, or a little breakup, right?
Yeah, a little breakup. I mean, not because of our own doing. Actually, her family, the night we graduated high school, ended up moving down to Kentucky. To start a power sports business.
Okay.
And we stayed in touch over the years. And then from Kentucky, her family moved down to Georgia.
Okay.
Because the water sports season was a little longer down in Georgia.
Okay.
And she would travel back and forth, you know, going to school up here in Connecticut. And we would occasionally touch base, you know, and then time passed. And, you know, when we both graduated college, we kind of started, you know, seeing each other again.
Started back up.
Yeah.
All right. And that's... God, I was thinking like that's another, but that's a lot longer than you think.
Yeah,
That's 20 plus years.
Yep. Yeah, we've actually this.
How old? You're older than me.
Not by much, though.
Well, I think it's pretty sizable.
I don't know about that.
What? I think it's more than you think it is.
Nah, I don't think it is.
How old are you?
Nah, I'm 46.
Yeah. I'm nowhere near that.
You're 32.
Yeah. Right. I wish. No, but let's just put it this way. I'm not sure we're in the same high school at the same time.
No, correct. Yeah.
That sounds pretty sizable. I'm just saying. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
that's
not
why
mentor type
that's
of
why
stuff.
I'm towering over you.
You
I'm
are.
Clearly
for anybody on YouTube, you are. Like, that's super annoying. I don't understand. Like, I almost want to do a picture afterwards and just, like, make sure everybody can see here. This is clearly the angle of the camera because it looks like you are mentoring me.
Yeah, I know.
Feed me, Papa.
That's right.
that's what that looks like. All right, so together now, two kids, the whole thing. So I want to get into the stuff that matters.
Exactly.
Not the whole, you know, you and Sarah together forever.
Well, listen, if I could interrupt you here.
Okay.
I know this is hard.
Yeah.
Jared does like to talk a lot. But for all those people viewing, I hope there will be viewers at some point.
Probably this, not, based on the opening.
This is my first podcast. I don't know if you know this.
What?
Yeah, I'm like a virgin podcaster over here.
It shows.
You know? I'm sure it does.
You know how people go, oh, my God, I never would have known.
Yeah. So
everyone
right
now at the sound of your voice is going, oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, so before I came onto the podcast, I was offered the 100th slot, and then all of a sudden I'm 101. I mean, I don't know what's going on here.
We had big news in the industry. I okay. kind of got to talk to the NAR president.
I know. This is a bait and switch.
People know him. That's all I'm saying. You don't come on your first podcast to get episode 100.
All right.
Well, that's not how it works.
I figured being your mentor.
Hey, you figured that. Nobody agreed to that. But play your cards right.
I might...
And maybe we'll look at 400 one day.
Okay, all right.
There's a lot in between.
But as a newbie podcaster, yeah. I don't know, man. You start, I didn't know what to expect. I don't know.
Dude, we just chill, man. Yeah, like, literally, we're going to talk about cool stuff. We're going to talk about stuff that actually matters to people. Yep. But, like, I mean, you know, like, you were asking me, like, what are we going to talk about? I'm just like, dude, we're just going to have a conversation. I got some things I want to talk to you about, but we're going to have fun, be yourself. My biggest fear is that you would come in and not be yourself.
No.
That you would, like, because, like, we laugh a lot. We're idiots. Like, we, you know, whatever. And my biggest fear is that you're going to come in and be like, well, indubitably, Jared. And, you know, is it Jared? Should I say Mr. James?
Sure.
And, like, start acting like that, which is still possible.
Yeah, it's possible.
But, no, this is it, man. Like, this is so much different than when you look at, you know, Reels or a YouTube short or one of those things. Where it's a very specific amount of information,
sure.
right? When you look at a podcast, man, it can go all over the place. It's it allows people escapism. They listen. There's little nuggets that come in here and there, but it's just kind of like people listen. They're in the car. They're at the gym. They're doing whatever. Like, it's just kind of like a takes them away from their day for a little bit.
Sure.
They hear, you know, two knuckleheads just laughing about nothing.
God, well, I don't know who wants to hear from me.
Yeah. Well, no.
So far, this is very underwhelming.
Well, this first and last podcast,
exactly,
everybody.
That's right, yeah.
All right. So anyway, so we got to that, but let's kind of get to, okay, so you guys got married young.
Yes.
You guys are together young,
yep.
obviously. I know that you've been at Lord Chamberlain, the I don't know, I call it Oval.
Nursing facility.
Nursing facility. Yeah. For how long?
Jeez, it'd be 30 years this November.
So really since
30
years?
Yeah.
So wait, since you were a teenager?
So yeah, I mean, I started in high school and college. It was like I working in the kitchen and and then got my administration license and then started working as an assistant administrator and then became the administrator like over 20 years ago.
Wow. So now you kind of run that joint. Like you kind of
yeah,
know.
These old people, they report to me.
Yeah. That's right. They do what they're told.
That's right.
What was that movie? As you can have a nice cold glass of shut the hell up.
Well,
now you go to sleep or I will put you to sleep.
Yeah,
you're in my world now, Grandma. Well, do you relate to that?
No, I don't relate to that. I cannot.
No?
But I can say if I
did
do...
you just wink at me?
No, was no. That... But if I do need a little boost to my ego, I do walk the hallways. And
what, like challenging the races?
No, I'm a hero, you know? I like. Look
Are
at
you
the...
actually?
Oh, man.
Oh, they think you're like the best looking...
Oh, man, I get like...
Why, because you could see?
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Are they?
You know?
Do you ever challenge them to races?
No.
Physical strength?
No.
Anything?
Nope.
Come on. Come on.
No, I don't need to, Jared.
Okay. They know.
That's right.
They know who the boss is.
That's correct.
Every once in a while, you got to usurp your dominance. Let everybody see. You get somebody who comes in, some young fella, 83 or so, and they try to take the joint over, and then you have to make a public display out of that.
Exactly.
To remind everybody who the boss is.
I don't know about that, but maybe. On a rare occasion.
All right. So talk to me, though, because I think one of the cool things is that, well, first off, you know, it's weird because you're kind of this weird... like hybrid
sure
of we always make fun of you
and
you make fun of things that are true.
Sure.
You're super cheap. let's be honest. Ask your children, ask your wife, ask anybody who knows you. It's what you're known for. Do you deny that Jared
propagates this information?
Okay.
No,
that's a used bottle of water he found
right.
in the trash can when we were coming in here today.
I'm frugal. I like to spend wisely. I don't want to spend frivolously.
By the way, it's one of the reasons you and I get along.
Yeah.
A lot of times when we go on vacations, you've said to me several times, like, because I'm always looking for the deal, I'm always looking for what's the best this.
Yeah,
and you're
I
appreciate that.
I do, yeah.
I'm the same way.
Yep.
My son Grayson, most people don't know this, the name Grayson means son of the steward.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It also means gray son, like a gray boy, but it means son of the steward.
Yeah.
And I've always believed in that because I've always had, a lot of times people close to me will joke around and they'll say that I'm cheap. And I'm like, look at my life.
Mm.
Look at everything. Look at my business. Look, I'm not cheap.
Yeah.
I just don't like wasting money.
Correct.
Now, I know where that comes from for me.
Yeah.
Where's that come from for you?
I think it's my growing up. I think that's something we have similar. You know, I grew up in a trailer park.
I lived in a trailer park.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so growing up, I mean, I can't say times were hard, but I knew my parents, you know, were working hard. honest people trying to make a good living for you know, my sister and I. And I think I had just a good respect for money.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just hate to see people being wasteful and spending.
That's a good way to put it. A good respect for money.
Yeah,
and, and to me, that's exactly what it is. I don't. You know, people always talk about the love of money and whatever. I don't, but I respect money.
Sure.
Because I know what life is like with money, and I know what life is like without money.
Exactly.
And so for anybody who's like, oh, you know, money won't make you happy. Well, neither will being broke.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Neither one of those two things are true.
Sure.
But I do know what life is like when I can pay my bills and when I can't.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's a little better experience.
Oh, it's a much better experience. And I mean, you know, this isn't the route we're going to go down, but I really believe this. I have always looked at myself as a giver.
Sure.
Like, not just that I can provide whatever. I want to be a giver. And I'm a big believer that when you underperform on your own abilities, or you underperform and you mismanage, you know, you're a bad steward of the money that's given to you, you now hinder your ability to give to other people. And so literally, like, the whole point of you having money wasn't just for yourself to be blessed. It was to be a blessing to other people.
That's right.
And when you don't have money and you don't have that ability, what happens,
exactly.
Right? I vividly remember a story when I was a kid. My mom, when I was younger, was like the SNL routine of the church ladies. You know, it was like they pray for everything they do, you know, whatever. And I vividly remember a story where, like, you know, a guy, like, you know, needed a job and he needed a suit and he needed, you know, whatever. And these ladies in the church, they just go, we're going to pray for you. We're going to pray for you. And I remember just thinking at some point, like, someone going to buy him a suit? Because, like, that's what he needs right now. He needs a suit, you know? And that was such a vivid picture in my head. It's always stayed in my head that there was a place for this over here, but there's also a place for the practical.
Sure.
You know, meaning sometimes it's not a bunch of, you know, Hyundais and Hyundalas off in the corner. Sometimes it's buy the guy a suit.
Mm.
Buy that, you know, go with that single mom and buy their groceries and do whatever. And so I've always looked at success. I've always looked at money. Obviously, first and foremost is you take care of yourself and your family and you do all of those. Look, when a plane is going down, what do they say first? Put that mask on yourself, otherwise you can't, you know, you can't put it on your kids. You can't. That same principle is true. I've always looked at it, and the thing that keeps me motivated, the thing that keeps me hustling, the thing that keeps me is that my role on this planet is not just to take care of myself. That's easy to do. My role on this planet, and when I fall short of that, I don't just hinder myself. I hinder my ability to be what I was supposed to be to other people. And now they don't get what they were supposed to get because I was the vessel that was supposed to bring it because I underperformed.
Sure.
See what I'm saying? So I get the whole money, like, yeah. you know, you respect it. You got to.
Sure.
You know, especially if you grow up without it.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know? I joke around with my kids all the time, like, last night, you know, what do you want to do for dinner? Like, I wasn't cooking. I was like, all right, let's go to whatever. Do you know I didn't even know what an appetizer was until I was married?
Yeah, we chuckle about that all the time. That's same with me.
I didn't even know what an appetizer. Yeah.
I didn't
Who
know
knew you were supposed to be full.
I know.
By the time the food came out.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. I knew what they were, but God forbid I ordered one.
Oh,
my Lord.
God.
I'd get the look.
Appetizer.
You know, never happened.
Oh, we got Mr. Rich over here.
That's right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I could see your mom. Doing
that's
that.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, man, it's for real. Like, I didn't know that. I had never been out of the country. Our idea of vacation was we went camping. And, like, where I grew up, camping didn't have IHOP and, you know, like, all of these things that camping grounds,
sure.
like they're set camping ground. This one you rent for $10. You know, we come around and light the fire for you. And, well, you know, like, I lived in Washington State in Colorado when I was growing up, two of the six states. And, like, we literally went into the mountains and you found a spot.
Yeah.
Like, that was vacation.
Sure.
So this whole world for me, like it's all new. So when I hear people say the kind of things they say, and a lot of people will think that I'm like a city slicker and I'm just like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
You have no idea. Look, I like this stuff over here better. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate and understand.
Sure.
You know, what that other side looks like, so to say. So anyway, all right, on that note.
Yeah, so you were asking basically just to follow up with regards to my position at Lord Chamberlain, you know. I actually went to college to be a high school English teacher, believe it or not.
I completely believe that. it's a safe job
exactly,
where you
yeah.
get benefits, you
yep.
get guaranteed increases. That fits one side of the hybrid
sure,
that we're
sure.
going to talk about.
Yeah, but never really liked English, but I was challenged by it and kind of an overachiever. So I
still
was
barely speak it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was actually working in the kitchen and cooking, helping out. And the owner, she was a 4'11" little lady, Mrs.
Looks
Spriglio,
like me on the camera right now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Optical illusion. in yet again.
Just a matriarch in the long-term care industry. And she saw something in me, and she basically said, hey, I'm going to send you to school to be an administrator. You know, so I always tell people, sometimes your path is chosen for you, or
right.
God will open up a door. And if you're basically courageous and willing enough to just to step into that particular opening, you know, God will open up, you know, pathways for you, which
so you
is kinda
just
cool.
So you had no direction, and you went to the first place someone sent you.
Exactly.
That's the that's what just happened right there.
Yeah.
But you did. But you were like, okay, let me go give it a shot.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then you just kind of worked your way up
that's
and did.
Right.
So this is interesting because you did that.
Sure.
You are also Dong Chom Chi. What's it called?
Karate.
No. Jerk. It is not karate.
Well,
you, how dare you?
Yeah,
first
dare
off,
you, yeah.
Okay.
So, karate is like.
What's it called? I was close.
It's called Tung Sudo.
Tung Sudo. Was I that far off?
Yeah, you were a little far off.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Korean
right.
slash Chinese.
What kind of tongue is it?
Yeah. Korean slash Chinese form of martial art. You
okay.
Know? So, karate is kind of the umbrella, and there's various styles that fall underneath that.
Is
so.
It correct to say that you also own a dojo?
That would be correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it not also true that you may or may not drive the same car as Cobra Kai?
Well, it's true.
Is it also true that people have never seen you guys in the same room?
That is true.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You draw your own conclusions.
There you go.
But you, okay, so you are in Tung Chu Tu?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Tung Chu Tu?
Tung Su Do.
Tung Su Do.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in Tung Su Do.
Yep.
You've been in that for many, many years now.
Yeah, started when I was 8. Actually, started in Taekwondo.
Okay.
And the school that I was training in closed.
So this is a pattern that you're going to notice.
Yeah.
Once they gave you a little management.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, done.
Yeah.
But I had a good dad, and he actually helped me find another studio. And I ended up meeting my instructor, Charlie Ferraro, and I've been with him ever since. And
how long ago was that?
Gosh, geez. That was probably, over 30 years ago.
It's amazing. And for anybody to bring it full circle, here we are 30 years later, and the other day I went to your yellow belt test.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
Now you didn't pass the first time,
yeah.
But you're, you know, stick to it.
I'm still trying, that's right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But you are a black belt.
Correct.
Many
yes.
times over.
Yeah, correct.
I can still take you.
Seventh
degree?
Eighth, technically.
Are you 8th?
Yeah.
So what was that lie you told back there?
I just feel bad telling people because you know what? It's sometimes. It's
did
just,
you actually lie to Joe and say 7th when you're 8th?
The guy took Tung Su Do. You know?
So you lied to him?
I didn't want to insult him.
Because he wasn't an 8th degree black belt?
I don't know. Listen.
This makes no sense, Jim.
I just got promoted to 8th Dan.
That means you're an 8th degree
I'm
black
an 8th
belt.
Degree black belt.
You
yes.
lied back there is what we're finding out here.
Yeah.
You told him 7th.
Did I? I don't remember.
God.
I'm willing to fight you and him. All right.
Oh
we will adjust
well,
this.
You better be at least an 8th if
all
you're
right,
going
right,
to, okay?
Right.
My God. All right. So now you have the dojo.
Correct.
Tung Su Do.
Yeah.
I was close. 8th degree black belt.
Mm-hmm.
You and your wife have a studio. And what most people don't know is that to get to 8th degree, you actually brought people from your current job and
right.
fought them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Have you ever seen that Seinfeld episode where Kramer is dominating the children and
yes.
they're all like he's undefeated? And then when they go and show up and see he's fighting 5-year-olds.
Correct.
And he's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're all the same belt. We're
yeah.
all the same. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's a Thursday night for me.
Okay. But no, so you're 8th degree now. You've got that going on.
Yeah.
So let's break it down.
Sure.
So you go to your job full time.
Mm-hmm.
You're running the senior center.
Sure.
Am I saying it correctly now?
Yeah.
Senior center?
Yep.
Is that what you called it?
We call it basically, it's a skilled nursing facility.
Come on, stop
so,
that. What'd you call it when
yeah.
I was talking to you? Did
yeah.
you call it a senior center? Wait, what do you call it for real? Not don't go
oh,
with
a
the
convalescent
technical.
Home.
No, but like what was the thing you called it in the beginning?
I don't remember actually.
I thought it was like senior or something.
Skilled senior center.
Okay. If I say senior center, is that insulting?
No.
Okay. So just so everybody understands. So you're running the senior center. You've got your dojo going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you still do it, but you had also bought one out in like Darien or something like that. Somewhere out there.
Sure. Greenwich.
Greenwich.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Not really.
Same thing, basically. Anybody who's around here knows that's the same thing. Thank you, Tom. You know. Same thing. And so you got that going on. But now you also invest heavily, not only in real estate, but you Actually, it's funny. I was talking to Jeff before this. Jeff runs Kingdom 320. Jeff was like the main trainer for Fortune Builders, which were the people from Flip This House. That's the other family that's on the vacations with us. And he was saying to me, I told him I was doing the podcast with you, and he's like, ask me if you can start coaching with me. He said, and I'm like, I said, I know he loved coming to Dallas and everything. I just said I think he's like worried about the commitment of it, you know? But you're kind of doing some, you might be doing some coaching training with them for investors and stuff. Walk me through your investment trail.
Sure.
So not where you are now. Well, let's just get to that. Let's back it up. Let's start here and then back it up. You mainly, primarily now are multifamilies. You're commercial. What are you?
Yeah. So I started in multifamilies. Bought my first two-family house. I came across the paperwork the other day. It was 1999. So I was 21 at the time, and I had a little money in the bank. And you know, it's funny, working in the nursing home, I would take my breaks and I would tour the floors and just speak to people that had more wisdom than I did.
Just boy with a dream. You've always been like that, though.
Yeah, kind of a little bit of an old soul. But there was one gentleman that I remember vividly talking to on my break, and he said, you know, I would always ask questions like, hey, you know, if you were me, and, you know, if you had something different to do in life, you know, any pearls of wisdom. And he says, you know what, buy real estate. And that just always stuck with me.
That's what got you.
Yeah.
So why did you have some money in the bank? Let's just get very simple. Why? What happened that you had money in the bank? You're working at the old folks' home. I mean, I assume it's not making you a ton of money.
No.
But again, you're super cheap. So did you save it? Did you slip on the floor at church?
No. I was working there. I was working at my instructor's karate school, managing the karate school at the time. I had a little power washing business, you know, painting.
That I didn't know, but that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So you were making money on the side.
I was always side hustling and doing little things here and there, and just I was a saver, you know. Just
with the
saving.
Purpose of
no
I had buying, no, or you just wanted security? You're like, I just want to save money.
Correct. Yeah, just save money. Just save, you know.
So. And what are you doing with it? You're just sticking into savings? Are you investing it? What are you
actually,
doing?
Actually, I had a little stock portfolio, nothing crazy at the time. And then, just saving in the bank, honestly.
Saving in the bank. So that was just your mentality. You didn't know what it was going to go towards, but you're like, it's not like you were making a ton of money at your job or something, but your mentality was, hey, a little bit, save it. You started a power wash thing, painting, whatever you could do to just make some extra dollars.
Correct.
You just wanted to start saving, even though you didn't know what it was for at that time.
That's right, yep.
Okay,
yep.
So then you come across a two-family home.
Sure.
What's the price of this home?
So it was
back in 99.
Yeah, $127,000.
I'll give you 128 right now.
That's right, yeah. Okay. Well, I think they were asking 140. I got them down to 127.
Okay.
And I only had to put down 5%. You know, so it was around $6,000 that I had to put down on my own money.
What was it, like an FHA? You didn't own a home yet, or what was
correct.
It?
Yeah, it might have been a first home owner.
Did you own your home in Shelton yet?
No, this was my first home.
Okay, so you probably got it. Did you live in one of the units?
I did eventually, yes. But originally...
Told the bank he did. That's what I'm hearing.
No. Originally, I did, yeah. But what ended up happening is at the last minute, I ended up finding a tenant, and I actually just rented out both sides, stayed at home for another year, continued to save money. And then I moved in when that tenant moved out.
Got the closing costs conceded to you, or you had to come up with them?
No, I had to come up with those.
All right, so you bought a $127,000 property, so 5% is $6,350.
Yep.
So you had to come up with $6,350. You had to come up with closing costs, so you're probably somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000.
Yep.
So at this point, you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know what's going to happen, but you just go and you buy this property, and you're like, it's an investment, and you start that path of being an investor.
That's right.
And you're still working full-time at your job. Are you still doing the side stuff?
Yeah. Yep.
Still doing the side hustle?
Yep.
And this is all... What's driving you right now? This is all, is it a fear of being broke or things falling apart because of childhood? Or is it I've got a bigger goal that I'm heading towards? So I always say that there's the difference between being motivated by the floor or the ceiling.
Sure.
Okay. And I personally, this isn't everybody, I have always been motivated way more by the floor than the ceiling.
Sure. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is some people see a big goal and they're like, I'm on my way. I'm going to go make it. I'm going to whatever. And then there's people who grow up a certain way and they go, I don't know about being on my way. I'm probably going to get there. But I can't be below this.
Sure.
Like, things can fall out at any moment. I know what that's like.
Yep.
I have always been motivated more by the floor than I have the ceiling. What about you?
Yeah, I think similar. I think basically, you know, reflecting on what that old timer told me about buying real estate, I knew there was something in that. You know, I didn't know at the time what it would open up, but I knew owning real estate was important. So I didn't want to rent somewhere being my first place. So I wanted to own. And I figured having a two family, you know what, it would help defer some of my own personal costs. And then when I had the opportunity to rent both sides, it was immediately cash flowing. So I figured, hey, why not? I'll stay back at home.
And that wasn't even when you first did it. That wasn't the major goal. It was just kind of like, oh, this is like a thing.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And honestly, it was a little, scary going into it.
I know you, because you're kind of a risk adverse person.
Yeah. So not really risk. It has to be calculated risk.
100%.
You know?
I agree with that 100%.
I figured the worst case scenario is, I'll sell it. I'm probably going to get my money back. But even if I lose the few thousand bucks, hey, it was a good experience. I learned, and that's how it went. And I still own it, it's been cash flowing ever since.
You still own it?
Still own it.
From 99?
Yep.
By the way, you just said a very interesting thing that I think is important that a lot of people are going to skip over, because you just described much of my decision-making many times, which is worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do you do that a lot?
I do.
I go worst-case scenario. Like a lot of times people, for a fear of the unknown, they don't act or they don't whatever. I, in my head, will obviously go, here's the potential, here's whatever. I always go, worst case, what's the worst?
That's right, yeah.
So I know what I'm fearing, and I know I can handle it. What's the absolute worst thing that happens here? And then how do I handle that if it happens? How do I get out of that? How do I fix that? Do you do that?
I do.
I notice you said that.
Yeah, I always say prepare for the worst, but expect the best.
Expect the best,
you
know? Prepare for the worst. Yeah,
exactly.
I say the same thing all the time.
So that was my motto. Hey, worst case scenario is I'm in over my head. I got to sell this piece of property, and I'll get a majority of my money back.
Okay.
Yeah, and then from there, basically, a few years later, my wife and I decided to get married. So what ended up happening is I had enough equity in that particular house because of appreciation and paying down the mortgage.
Yep.
I ended up refinancing.
I was going to say refinance it, and then went and
pulled out some change, and we redeployed that.
Did it need work when you bought it?
So one side actually was a train wreck, believe it or not.
I believe it.
I ended up having a tenant that stayed in there for like 3 years, and I didn't have to renovate it at all.
Even as a train wreck?
Exactly, yeah.
So you're a slumlord.
I was not a slumlord. I was willing to renovate it, but they were fine. They weren't,
you're
ready to move
the victim.
Out.
You're blaming the victim.
No. but they ended up moving out three years later, and then I renovated the entire thing.
How bad
thing.
Was it?
I can't say it was real bad, but it needed work. I mean, it needed a full kitchen, needed replacement windows.
So when you moved them in there, though,
I didn't move them in. No, they were with the house.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Came with the house.
Yeah,
so the rent was what it was, but they were paying tenants?
Correct, yeah. So when I bought the house, it was not vacant. I had one paying tenant.
Okay.
And then the side that I was going to live in basically ended up finding another tenant. And they were a short-term rental. They ended up staying with me for, a year.
Okay.
And it was funny. I'll never forget. I was 21-year-old pipsqueak. I pull up. I go to show them the apartment. And I think they were in their 40s or 50s at the time. He had a corporate position in Shelton up on Commerce Drive. And he's looking at me like, who's this little pipsqueak show?
Yeah.
And he goes, are you the owner? I said, yeah, I'm the owner.
Yes, I'm boss. I am.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I also deliver milk on the side.
Yeah. But I was talking. I was just giving him the facts, telling him this is the lease, the price. And we struck a deal, and here we go.
Did you have any, like when you were doing that at the time, what was the stance of, I could see Sarah being for it. Sarah's always kind of trusted you, as far as, she's going to be tough about it, but, she's always kind of like, okay, Jim's, I think she'd, trust your decision-making.
Yeah.
Based on my conversations with her behind your back.
Sure.
I think she trusts your decision-making. What about people what was the role of, your father?
Mom and dad were nervous, of course, I think.
But what is your, for everybody listening, your father passed away how many years ago?
2019.
Okay, so, Jim's father, I love Jim's father. We were like two peas in a pod. Jim and I get together and laugh and whatever.
Sure.
When me and your father were at a party, we just sit in a corner, we just laugh and talk and, whatever. And so we had a great whatever,
sure.
Right? What was that relationship like at that time? Were they not absent, but whatever, do your thing? Or was he present, giving you advice? Or what was the role with that?
Yeah, I can't say they were giving me advice. I mean, I think they were supportive, nervous, in other words, because, they didn't buy their first house,
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, because
until I was, I was actually 8 years old. So we lived in the trailer park. Got it.
Calling that a house?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then when I was eight, we bought our first house. And my parents, I remember my father and mother, they hustled. They saved.
I get it, man.
It was tough for them. Yeah, they were nervous. And then after the fact, you know, very supportive. My dad was a very handy man, so he was come over and help me paint.
You're kind of like that too, though.
Yeah, I try to be, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
I try to, you know, if somebody is, I don't like to rely on people, so I like to try to, I like to pay people, but I still want to know how to do it, you know? So
yeah.
Little things like changing toilets, sinks, pipe stuff, you know, I could do it.
Yeah.
Not that I want to do it now, and I'm fortunate where I don't have to do those things all the time.
You're talking about your rentals.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so let's talk about that. So you got the multifamily.
Sure.
You held on it for how long before you refinanced it and said, let's move to it? And what motivated it? Was it you had to pay for a wedding? Was it you were like, let's start branching out and buying more? Like what happened next?
So yeah, I just had that. And then Sarah and I started kind of seeing each other again. And we decided that we were going to get married. And down the road was a three family, literally, you know, probably like a couple blocks. And we actually went to school with one of the daughters who lived in that house. Their mom was selling it. I think they were going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And we approached her and just said, hey, we heard you're, you know, moving out. And would you consider selling your house to us? And she said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So we ended up refinancing Congress, pulled some equity out. We still had some additional savings. And then we bought a three family.
Okay.
And that's where we started. And we had, you know, our first two kids there were, you know, born.
So at this
there.
Point, you still don't have the house you're in now.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So now you have the two family, you have the three family. Yep. So now you've got what they call five doors.
That's right. Yeah.
You're living in one of the doors.
Yep.
So you got four doors paying rent.
Correct.
Okay. Bring me through the process. Like, do you buy more? Are those the only ones you have?
Those
like,
are the only ones I have.
I'm talking about moving forward now.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Correct. Like, okay. Yep. Yep. So we're living in the three family and continuing to save, and we just realized, hey. Listen, we don't want our kids living in, you know, a three family our whole life. We want a little bit of a yard, you know. So we had a particular section in town that we always, you know, thought we would, you know, look.
Right.
And one day, I'll never forget, we were driving home from church, and there was actually an open house sign on our road. And Sarah and I said, shwoop, you know, so we went in there.
Quiet neighborhood. Yeah. You're talking about the house right now.
Exactly, yeah. So we toured it, and we kind of just felt, you know, hey, this could be home. And we put an offer in. You know, and here we are, you know.
Now you rent out the other. So now you've got five doors you're renting.
That's right.
What's the next process? What's the next thing? So now you own your home.
Yep.
And you've got five doors.
Correct.
Okay. And you're like, that's good? Or you're like, how can we get more?
Yeah. So I was always, you know, saving, looking at how we could we acquire more. And then the next particular property that we found was a two-family in town. All of our properties, for the most part, in
Shelton. Yeah, you were always looking. In the beginning, you were just, we'll get to this, but in the beginning, you were just doing multifamilies in town, like that was your...
Correct, okay. Yeah. So we found a two-family, numbers worked, you know, it positively cash flowed. And so we purchased that one. And then literally a year later, another two-family in town opened up. You know, we have a little boat in our marina.
We were all shocked when you got a boat. We were all shocked when you got a boat.
I know.
That was a shocker. Cheap. I mean, when I say shocker, by the way, we all thank you because the only thing better than having a boat is having a friend
I know.
And you're that guy.
I know. Well,
I
put that towards entertainment fund. You know.
I mean, and it is. I mean, if anybody heard the music that comes from that boat that your children play.
I know.
Holy. Well, I mean, it's impressive their knowledge of the 90s.
They are, and 80s. You can't forget the 80s.
Well,
yeah, a little bit.
It's a lot of 90s rap. Yeah. Okay, so... Let's bring this full circle. Though.
Sure. So the gentleman down the marina actually had a house with a partner, and he approached me because he knew I had a couple houses in town, and he said, hey, you know, I got this two-family. Honestly, the numbers aren't working. I can't make it work. I don't have the time, and would you like to consider buying it? So I took a look at it, and the numbers were great. It worked out well. And I ended up acquiring that one too.
So how many forget about commercial spots, forget about whatever. How many multifamilies do you own now?
So multifamilies in town.
Just multifamilies. Not including, like I said, not commercial, not things that you're a part of a fund or you're doing whatever. Like,
okay.
Just multifamilies that you've purchased. Like how many multifamilies do you have?
We have a total of eight.
Okay. And then how many doors is that?
So those doors, I think it's around 15.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yep. And those are you have a property management company.
So
you're doing it.
Yeah. What? So I manage all those.
I was going to say, because I feel like you still are taking calls and stuff.
Yeah.
This is the cheap side, guys. Just
Listen, I've been fortunate. The houses that we bought, they were, you know, good quality homes. We joked a little bit about
slumlord. You're not a slumlord. No, you've got places that are staying together. You keep them well. You're good to your tenants.
Exactly. And I'm fortunate. I got a lot of longstanding tenants that have been with me for a while. And yeah, so not a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
On a rare occasion.
Yeah, when it comes up, because I've seen you have to, you've been together and you're like, I got to go run over whatever. Yeah. I just came from blank or I just, you know, whatever. How do you handle things like the lawn care and the, you know, that kind of stuff?
So yeah, originally I used to, you know, if I had a tenant that was responsible, I'd give them a little discount on the, you know, on the rent and they would do it. But I just found over the course of time, you know what, they take kind of a little advantage.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking the, yeah, the discount.
Like, I don't need a mowed right now. I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. So the place would become a little unsightly. I used to do the same thing with snow removal.
Yeah.
And then I just realized, you know what, with the liability, if somebody slips, trips, and falls.
Please tell me you hire someone to do these lawns.
Yeah, we do.
You're not
yeah.
doing them yourself.
No.
I was going to say, Jim.
Yeah. I might have my son do them this year.
This is an intervention. And by the way, you think he's kidding. You probably will try to have your son
do
them.
Yeah, that's where Sarah actually brought a little reasoning, you know, because, you know, if there was a snowstorm, it was miserable. I'd be all
dude, I remember.
Around,
yeah, like I
know,
remember.
Salting, and then they melt, and then they freeze again. Yeah, so we outsourced that. Fine. Yeah,
this is
yeah.
an intervention, Jim.
Exactly. No,
this is.
We did that a few years ago. We're good.
All right. So you've got those properties. So they're all generating revenue. You hold on to them. Like, correct. What is your thought process on those? Like, have you sold any?
So no, actually,
like none of the ones you purchased, you've sold.
Correct. Yeah.
Even through this last market.
Yeah. Just buy and hold. Yeah. I always listen. I have a. Yeah, I go back and forth. Should I sell? Should I not sell?
I feel like we had a conversation a couple years ago about one that you were thinking of selling.
Yeah. I always think about it. But then again, I just figure just slow and steady.
And is it because they're all bringing positive cash flow? So you're like, I don't need the money. They're bringing me money. Whatever.
Yeah, I always think like, listen, what can I do? Yeah, I could roll it up, you know, maybe to some more commercial properties. That's always been kind of maybe the thought process.
That's where I was going to go next.
Yeah, I have a couple friends, you know, in a local town, and they bought and they held on and they sold them, you know, right during COVID.
Yeah.
And listen, they did very well, but you know what? What did they do with the money? They got taxed to death. They invested in gold, they put it in the stock market, and they're like, whoa, what is going on now? And you know what? They kind of are kicking themselves a little bit because they don't have that cash flow coming in. And, you know, he did well, but I think he recognized he probably should have, held on to that.
For you and your hierarchy of value here, like the cash flow to you is worth more than cashing them out and doing like going and buying like a larger commercial or something like that, or maybe you have refinanced some of them and went after something else. I don't know. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But like for you, the cash flow is king.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Have you with any of those? Are the multifamilies it? Or is that what you have? Or have you gone into the commercial space? I mean, technically, you know, four family above is a commercial, but I mean, like, have you gone into the actual commercial space?
Yes. Yeah. Like about 5 years ago, I was fortunate. We bought our first commercial property right in town, you know, and it's got 14 apartment buildings on top. It's got some light, you know, professional spaces, and then it has three retail centers.
So you've got rental up top, you've got retail, you've got, okay, and how did you go about doing, again, we don't need to get like very personal into your finances, whatever, but just for the people who are listening, because people say, well, how do I make that next step?
Sure.
How did you go about financing that? Did you refinance some of the properties you had? Did you just save over time and do whatever? Did you, like, what was your?
Yeah, so for me personally, I'm not the sole owner, and I'm a co-owner in the commercial piece. And it was my first, you know, $1 million deal, whatever. I found this, you know, person in town. I was referred to him, and he owns a local accounting firm in Shelton.
Thanks for letting me know, by the way.
Yeah.
You're no friend of mine.
I know, no friend of yours. Yeah. And he said to me, he goes, hey, listen, if you ever find a deal, you know, and you think it has value, you know, bring it to me. We'll see if we can, you know, make it happen.
Yeah.
We could take it down. So there was a local, you know, like famous building in town, and it happened to go for sale. So I ran some numbers.
It was a Hooters.
Yeah, no. Let's, no.
By famous, he means he frequented this place.
No.
Yes.
And I presented it to him. He said, hey, it's got some value. Let's take a tour. So he toured it with me, with the realtor. And
what'd you just call it?
The Realtor.
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 For everybody listening, I'm catching him there calling it Realtor.
No, it's Realtor.
I thought we talked about this.
Nope, I talked to you.
No, I talked to you. No, you don't correct me.
So what I did personally, you know, probably about maybe 6-7 months prior to that, I ended up taking my multifamily portfolio in town, and I basically combined it into a commercial blanket mortgage, you know, with a local town. So what I did is I refinanced
it. What do you mean, a local bank?
Yeah, a local bank in town. I refinanced that, and I was able to pull out, you know.
Explain to everybody what that means. So basically what you did was that you took, basically you turned your properties into a portfolio of properties, correct?
Yeah.
And then you found a local bank who was willing to refinance, put one loan on all of those.
That's right.
And now...
So yeah, I used to have all of the properties in my own personal name. And you know what? it showed up on your credit, and you hit.
What do you have now? An LLC, a trust? What do you have?
Yeah. So right now, all the property is in an LLC mm-hmm. and a trust, and it's just a lead. I found that commercial loans are a lot easier process, you know, than going through a personal, you know, process.
Yeah.
And so the particular bank looked at all of the cash flow. They looked at all the leases, the term dates, and they valued the properties. They did an appraisal, and I was able to take out a set amount. This is what I owed. And I was able to extract some cash, which then I redeployed on that commercial piece.
Did you have to redeploy all of it into it, like a 1031? Or were you able to, was if you wanted to, could you hold some of it back
yeah.
for like carrying
yep.
costs
Absolutely.
And doing that
yep.
stuff?
Yeah, I did not do a 1031 exchange. I just basically...
Yeah, I know. I didn't know if they yeah. there was a rule that you had to. Okay, so I have two questions about
sure.
that. Number one, go into for a second here a little bit more. Mm-hmm. On the idea of the structure of an LLC and a trust,
sure.
if you're
yeah,
able to,
fine,
if you're
yeah.
not able to, that's fine. But like, just give me like a little wink, say move on. But on that and why you do it that way.
Sure.
And then my second question is a two-parter: is since they're now blanketed in a loan, what mm-hmm. happens if you want to sell one of them?
So yeah, in the actual mortgage agreement, there actually is language in there. So if I decided to sell a particular piece or parcel, they each have percentage values.
Gotcha.
Based on so. There is the opportunity to sell that.
So it's not like a typical loan where like that loan is now closed out. A percentage of that loan would be closed out, but then that blanket mortgage would continue.
Correct.
Okay,
yes.
That's interesting because I don't
yeah.
think a lot of people listening even
sure.
understand that there's a such thing as a blanket
yeah.
loan.
Yep.
Is that a normal thing overall, or is that a local bank thing where they were just like...
No, I think it's a... I think it's a pretty popular thing in today's, you know, commercial craziness a little bit.
Yeah.
I think banks are a little less inclined to do stuff like that. So I found you have a little more success working with local banks in town.
Did you have to put more down, or did they just take the equity, or did they take the appraisal and say, no, there's plenty of equity here. This is fine.
Correct. Yeah. 80% loan to value. So
awesome. And so
yeah.
as long as that was there with the value compared to what you owed on your properties, you
Correct.
Were completely fine.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the second, well, I guess the second part of that question you had already answered, which was the, the first part we didn't answer yet, which is, explain for – I understand this stuff.
Sure.
This is – I was going to say this is our world, but like, you know, this is my world and you do this stuff
yeah.
too. It's your world too. But like even though a lot of people are in that world, they don't understand that process of the LLC with the trust and how that works. There are multiple LLCs. Are there one? Why are you doing that? How is it shielding? Can you just give like a brief overview of how you have that structured and why you have it structured that way?
Sure, yeah. I mean, basically the premise is you got to protect your own personal assets. So you want to basically have everything in an LLC, you know, for protection in case somebody...
One LLC or multiple?
So I have...
Because there's different schools of thought on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, so I have one LLC mm-hmm. and I have actually through, you know, the recommendation of Jeff Rakowski,
yep.
you know, I
our,
have
our
an,
buddy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have a real estate trust and LLC set up in Nevada.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the umbrella, and it has a little more of a corporate veil, you know, covering.
So one trust, one LLC.
Correct.
So all
yeah.
your properties in one LLC, you
that's
know,
right.
call it Jim Berger's, whatever it is.
Yep.
And then there's a trust. Okay, explain that, how those work together.
Each property has a real estate trust that's associated with it. So
one LLC, multiple trusts for each property.
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
explain why that is.
So basically, if somebody particularly fell on a particular property and a particular attorney was trying to investigate basically who owned that particular property, they would end up discovering that it was created in Nevada, and Nevada has, you know, a lot more
their rules.
Yeah, their
yeah.
rules are a little more safe, if you will, with disclosing information about who owns particular property. So they'd hit a roadblock
yeah.
and they wouldn't really be able to discover who actually owned that property.
And the liability for you falls only on that property,
Correct.
Not any others.
That's right.
And that's the main reason. That's what I'm getting to here. That's the main reason of you doing it that way, is that it's not like your whole portfolio is going to be at risk. You have each individual property set up. You have one LLC, but different trusts for each one, so that if somebody goes and, you know, whatever, says I was mowing the lawn, I cut
yeah.
my leg off and it was his fault, you know, whatever.
Correct.
You are not liable beyond that one property because of how you're structured.
Correct.
And prior to that, because you really just didn't even know what you're doing, you were just buying properties and going and doing it and whatever. And, you know, doing the right thing, meaning doing a good thing, taking a chance investing, but doing the wrong thing in the sense that you were structured in a way that put you at liability.
That's right.
Which is unfortunate in our country that that's the case. The more you grow, the more things you do, you just put yourself at more liability to,
yeah.
you know, for people to come after you. But it's just the truth.
Yeah.
You know, whether you like it or not, it's just the truth.
Yeah. And it's kind of the natural progression. Most people focus, I find out, oh, I got to make sure I set this upright, I set this right upright, and they never take any action. You know, I have found in life, if you take action, you know, in a matter of time, things will sort themselves out.
Right.
And you'll end up setting up correctly.
Right. Even if it's not necessarily always the absolute right way, just the fact that you're in motion, eventually you're able to make adjustments.
Correct.
There's the old line that you can't steer a parked car.
Exactly.
Right. And so the idea is that you could turn that steering wheel all you want. If it's not moving, it's not going anywhere. It doesn't matter if you're making the right move. In order for it to be the right move, you could be making the wrong direction. But as long as you're moving, you have the capability of that steering wheel to go in the right direction. And that's a great microcosm of what you're talking about with how powerful action is. You can't steer a parked car. So you got to be trying something.
Yeah. Well, my son has tried. He just recently got his license.
Oh, yeah. Just kidding. God. That's a 2 out of 10.
Yeah, all right.
2 out of 10. 2 out of 10. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So before we move forward, anything else on the real estate front? So you got that, and then you obviously got with this partner.
Yeah. So,
not JJ.
Yeah,
For this place, sure. This other commercial place. Yep. Anything else you've got involved
yeah,
in?
Yeah. So basically where our studio is in Shelton, I was a renter for many, many years, and I got a hint that the particular owner of the building, who was out of state, was looking to sell, you know, the property. And once again, I said, hey, you know what? This might be an opportunity. It was an older building. A lot of people like me that had month-to-month leases that didn't have a lot of, security as far as, you know, renting. It needed some CapEx. So I wasn't sure how the deal was going to, you know, present, but I ended
Explain to everybody what that means. It needs some CapEx.
So basically capital improvements. I mean, the roof, it's funny. We used to teach and literally if it was raining, I'd have buckets all over the dojang. And it was just,
called a dojang?
A dojang, yeah.
So why am I calling a dojo? And you said yes.
That's the
I'm a commoner.
Name. Yeah, yeah.
I'm a commoner.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's dojang?
That's right.
Okay.
That's Korean for workout area.
I didn't know you were Korean.
I am not. But I practiced the ways.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Go ahead. Good.
So in any event, yeah, the building was rough. I'm not going to lie. So I knew we can get it at a good, price. And so I ended up, showing it to my partner and he saw value in it. And we ended up presenting an offer. He took it and here we are.
Were you the reason that building went downhill?
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, you were a tenant there, which means it was probably in great working condition until you got in there.
I was a slum tenant.
Yeah, exactly. You were a slum tenant.
Yeah. So interesting with this particular property, we weren't able to finance it. We had to pay cash for this. So once we bought it cash, what we did is
nice little humble brag right there.
No, it wasn't all my cash.
we had to pay cash. I just happened to have it.
No, because a lot of people get into these particular, everybody thinks everything's financeable, but it's not in the real world.
Because the bank would look at it and say, you've been a slum tenant.
No, not necessarily, because a lot of the leases, when you go into a commercial deal, leases have value.
The lease, and because he wasn't having you sign leases,
you
didn't have any security for that.
So the bank basically puts value. If you have a 3-year lease, they're like, wow, that has value because there's some stability.
Yeah.
If you have a 5-year lease, they're like, wow. But if you have a lot of month-to-month leases, they're going to be a little more, hey, this is a little riskier for me. So because a lot of the tenants were on month-to-month, such as myself, we had to hustle and secure a lot of the long-term standing tenants on, actual, leases. And so we did that. We had to invest in the roof. We had to clean that up
a
little bit.
Just to be clear, you are making the sound that a dog makes.
The roof.
The roof? I'm sorry. It's the third time you've said it.
Hey, I am an English major, so you shut your mouth.
You didn't pass.
Whatever.
The roof.
So, yeah.
The roof. I'm sorry. I just have to.
Listen.
Normally, I wouldn't call a guest out, but I know you a little bit.
Who let the dogs out? All right.
You keep saying this. Roof. My God.
All right.
The roof.
Who is dominating him?
Okay. That's good. Meow.
In any event. So we invested some cash, we got the building stabilized, and then we were able to refinance it, and we actually pulled out our initial investment, and now we have a mortgage that we pay back.
Okay, and where'd you get the cash?
So same thing, yeah. I stole it from you.
Okay. No, that's right. You don't bring me in for the investment.
Exactly.
But when you need the cash.
I take my family on cheap vacations.
That's very true.
Oh, man. No, just savings and, refinancing. I can't remember where exactly. But
you don't remember where you... that's called I'm On It podcast.
People might hear, and I don't want to say. No, listen, I think...
What's going on?
Yeah, it must have been refinanced. Well, I could tell you. Actually, you look for like pearls of wisdom, right?
Okay.
So one other...
Believe me, I've been searching.
Yeah. One other pearl of wisdom that actually I learned, many, many years ago is with my own personal residence And then I was fortunate enough, a lot of banks will not do this anymore, but I was fortunate enough to get a home equity line of credit, believe it or not, on you know, that my first two family.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a mortgage and then I had a home equity line of credit.
Okay.
And what I learned is that home equity lines of credit are based on average daily interest rates.
Yeah, they change, yeah.
Not on a fixed interest rate. So what I would do is, hey, I had $50,000, you know, so I would borrow $50,000, let's say, just as an example, and I would drive all of my positive cash flow income towards paying that debt down. So if, you know, on the first day of the month, it was $50,000. By the end of the month, it might have been down to $40,000.
Yeah.
So I recognized that that was a tool that I could use to deploy, you know, capital.
So it was just like having like a built-in little capital for
you.
It worked. Okay, makes sense.
So I was able to leverage that a little bit.
All right. Hey, guys, you're watching this episode. This episode is brought to you, first off, by my company, Jared James Enterprises, or I like to call it just Jared James. I don't like to say the enterprises. But look, guys, we do coaching and training and speaking and all these other kind of things to make you better. And it's funny because I've talked about for years the idea that we're in a pros versus amateurs market. And we're seeing that more than ever right now with hundreds of thousands of agents leaving the business. And so many that have such good intentions, but they're not sure how to really get there, right? Have you ever had a disconnect between what you intended to do and then what your actions actually were every day? And that's why you need a coach, right? I've been watching the news lately, especially sports news, and I'm watching, you know, major coaches getting getting fired. But the one thing I know for sure is they're going to rehire someone, because the last thing they're going to do is have a group of professionals and not have a coach, because they won't perform at the same level, right? And we are no different. If you're watching this and you don't have a coach, I promise you, you're underperforming. So make sure you check out jaredjamestoday.com. Get yourself a coach. If you're a brokerage, let's get you into brokerage ride training for the whole office. Very affordable. We get them training they need to be a pro and not an amateur, boost their performance, boost their confidence, boost all of it. We can do all of that for you. Second place here, we're also brought to you by another one of my companies called Cleared and Closed. Again, being a pro, you're going to hear this over and over again. You need a transaction coordinator. And so we took this very serious. We believe in it so much that we're offering you a free transaction. So literally, you can come in, use one of our transaction coordinators for a free transaction. They'll do a custom workflow with you, all of it. And if you don't like them, there's no contract. So go to clearedandclosed.com, clearedandclosed.com, and give the experience that your consumers want, that they want to tell somebody else about, okay? And you do that not by doing everything yourself. You do that by running an organization, by running a business, not running around. And that starts the number one hire in every real estate business, whether you're day one or day 20,001, because there's no risk. You only pay if you actually close the file is a transaction coordinator. So check them out, guys. They're amazing, okay? Do a consult. It'll be worth it. And last but not least, we are brought to you by another one of my companies, First Up, FYRST, firstup.com. If you're a broker and you're watching this, if you're an agent, tell your broker to get on First Up. Com. You know, I did something the other day online and we talked about the difference between spending money, cutting spending, and going all in on investments, because investments bring returns. And there's a difference between checking boxes and buying tech tools so that you can sound good to the agents and having stuff that actually brings you a return. And in this mobile age that we live in right now, what First Up really does is it digitalizes that traditional whiteboard. You know, the old days when you'd come into the office and everybody would talk about their listings that they have coming up, and they would talk about their open houses, and they would talk about all these things. The problem is everybody doesn't come in anymore and gather in those meetings, so that whiteboard's not quite as effective, okay? And so what we've done is we've taken that traditional whiteboard setup and we've digitized it. And so all of those listings that your brokerage has that are between the time of when they get signed to a listing agreement and they actually hit the MLS, you're allowed to promote those within your brokerage. That's completely compliant, completely allowed. And so what we did was we said, get rid of all the confusing Facebook groups and all the group text messages and everything that all your agents aren't paying attention to. We built an app, we built a tool that is so simple. Our goal is not like most apps, which is how long can we keep you on? It's how quickly can we get you off of that app? We want the agents on there less than 60 seconds a day. But what they're going to do is put all of their listings on it pre-market before they actually hit the MLS. It's going to notify everybody within the brokerage. That digital
whiteboard, let them know what's coming on. It's going to buyer match because the agents are going to put their buyer criteria in there, and it's going to let them talk back and forth about a buyer they have for it because it's going to notify them that there's a buyer that matches. It's going to do all of this. You're going to have people. It's going to let them know if they need to assign somebody. Somebody needs to do the open house for them, and so they can raise their hand or contact each other, do open houses, all of these kinds of things. Communicative tool, also one that brings ROI, double-ending deals in a compliant manner. And so this is something that every single brokerage in a 2024 world needs. And we're launching something real soon where we're only allowing so many within each market. So get on it now before it's too late. Take a chance. Go on over to firstup.com, F-Y-R-S-T-U-P.com. Extremely affordable as a brokerage. But when you talk about ROI, return investment, every single one of you at the sound of my voice needs to be using firstup.com. You won't regret it.
All right. So you got that place.
Yep.
The Dojang.
The Dojang.
The Dojang. The Dojang. And then, is that all of your commercial,
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. But now you have other investments.
Correct. Yeah. I'm a part owner in a home care, skilled home care company.
Okay. How'd that come about?
Yeah. You know what? So being in long-term care, you know, for many years, I recognized that, you know, listen, nobody generally wants to be in a skilled nursing facility.
Right.
So, you know, we do short-term rehab and we also do long-term, you know. So if somebody can't provide care for themselves at home, you know, this is their residence. But we get a lot of younger people, you know, in their 40s and their 50s that come in with knees, hips, spinal injuries, and we'll perform rehab for 2-3 weeks with our physical therapists, our occupational therapists, our nurses. And, you know, what we recognized is that people now want to get rehab at home.
Yeah.
You know, so with home care, you know, it's become a popular thing.
It's a very big thing, yeah, right now. But how did you get involved in it, though?
So I just saw a trend, and I started hunting and, you know, networking, and I found a person that basically had a rehab company. He actually hired therapists to go and contract with nursing homes.
Okay.
So he had an agency, if you will, for rehab therapists. So a lot of people
almost like a
temp agency.
I was going to say like a temp. Yeah. I was literally going to say temp agency.
So he was he's a physical therapist by training, and he would contract with, you know, convalescent homes, and he would provide our rehab services, you know. And so he always wanted to get into the home care, you know, setting. So he recognized the trend too. So we kind of sat down over a cup of coffee, brainstormed a little bit, and we just...
But you cold reached out to him?
So I don't exactly remember how we met.
You have a lot of things you don't remember.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it was networking, and I was introduced to him. I called him up, you know, set up a coffee meeting.
You've always kind of been like that.
Yeah.
When we go places.
Yeah, I don't mind
you
talking to people.
Get all butt hurt when we go out to, what's it called? Hibachi, mm-hmm, in your town. And yet Bo comes over to JJ.
Yeah, don't talk about Bo.
It's just the truth, okay? But you, everywhere we go, you do. You know, that's that guy, that's that guy, that's whatever. Like, is that your nature, or is that just like you are thinking of networking and opportunities?
Yeah, listen, I'm a firm believer that if you have a particular vision, or if you have a particular thought, you know, I believe, you know, people will be put in your path. And, you know, sometimes, you know, those people put in your path to bless you, and then sometimes they're put in your path to put you in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's our job as, you know, good stewards to, you know, filter those out. But yeah, this particular guy was a good guy. I kind of got a good feel for him, and yeah, took a shot, honestly.
So you give yourself the opportunity, though, to basically like meet people, and you never know who's going to be somebody that you're either friends with, or that they're going to end up doing something with you, or they're going to end up, you just like to give yourself that opportunity.
Correct.
Every single place you go into. And by the way, now, I like, that is, when we talk about mentor mentee, Jim is not my mentor, to be clear. Yeah. Again. But that is something I can learn from.
Yeah.
Because I am like a natural extrovert.
Yeah.
Introvert. Natural introvert, stay away, don't like crowds, don't like whatever.
Sure.
Like I'm thinking about, I got an event I'm going to right now, and I'm dreading like going into like the what do you call it? The check-in.
Sure.
What's it called? Where the check-in's at? What's that room called? The lobby? Yeah, the lobby.
Okay.
Yeah. Professional speaker, everybody.
Yeah, it's called the roof.
Yeah, the roof. Yeah, there you go. It is pet friendly.
Yeah.
But I dread going because I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to, like, I'm just like, you know, whatever. You've always been kind of good at, like, reaching out, talking to people, seeing people, whatever. Whereas I'm like, head forward, like, just, you know, and I don't know if that's a byproduct of the worlds we live in or, you know, whatever. But I've always noticed you're really good at that as, like, you know, networking and talking and making it a point to do that. And so it's interesting to hear that in some cases that's turned into something for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. I learned a long time ago, you never judge a book by its cover. It sounds kind of common, but yeah, when you're meeting with people, I've always been humbled that you think somebody, you know, is in a particular, you know, position in life, and you're like, wow, this person is like really successful. You're like, wow, I never knew that about that person. So it's always intriguing to me to give people an opportunity to, you know, share their story and, you know, see where, you know, life takes you.
And then you introduced to him the idea of he already had the company, or did it have to pivot to become something else? And then did you have to make a financial investment to become a part of it? Like, how did that all work?
Yeah, I made a financial investment. He had kind of the structure already in place because he was already doing rehab, you know, therapy. So he had a team of rehab therapists that he was already using to service, you know, skilled nursing facilities. It was just a matter of redirecting them through a new company, a new entity to go into the home. So, yeah.
And you're like, I want in.
Yeah. In other words, he had a vision, you know, he's been pondering it, and I had the vision and just said, hey, let's give this a shot.
Are you a minority partner? Are you guys 50-50 partners?
Yeah, no, I'm a minority partner, and which is nice for me because, you know, I'm doing my full-time gig.
Right.
I did invest some money, but he's kind of like the hands-on, you know, manager, you know, majority shareholder, if you will.
What, any other investments? The answer is yes, Jim.
Yeah. I mean, I've invested a couple, you know, in a couple other, you know, startup ventures.
Like what?
You know, one is called Luxy.
I use it just because of you.
Yeah. Luxy is a car service.
Ride, right?
Yeah. Luxy Ride. You know, the premise was the gentleman who started it, believe it or not, owned a waste management company.
Yeah.
And he identified, you know, early in the business that, you know, when you're disposing of waste, when you come back, your truck is empty.
By the way, now I feel bad. I said that I'm using them to drop me off at the airport because now you are describing me as disposing of waste.
Yes, exactly. I mean, but he recognized that, you know, when a truck is leaving the yard with waste and you're dropping on the way back, it's kind of just an expense. It's not earning you money.
Right.
So he actually set up an infrastructure where he was able to pick up garbage and, you know, figure out how to make that two-way transaction, if you will.
Not sure how this turned into black car service driving me to the airport.
But the same
thing, want to be clear, I do not go in a garbage truck.
Yes, you do. Okay. No, but with limo drivers and livery services.
Now we're there. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the same mentality. A lot of our limo drivers in the state, you know, they're great service people, but not really good business people. So they're dropping at the airport, and on their trip back, it's an empty leg, it's referred to. So, they put together a software company. So it is a software company. And I'm just figuring out how to connect limo drivers with rides, you know, to and from, you know, the airport.
Yeah.
And it's going pretty well.
Isn't that so true with so many contractors and workers or whatever? Like, I commonly think about the idea. Like, I'm on Biz Buy Sell all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I commonly think about the idea of, like, let me go buy that company, that roofing. Is that what you call it? Roofing?
Roof.
Let me go buy that roofing company. No, but like seriously, I think of myself like that plumbing company, that HVAC, that whatever, like we could kill it, but your business sense is so off.
Yeah.
You have no accountability. You have no systems or structure. You have no, like I remember one of the people that I follow online, I forget her name right now, but like she buys, what do you call it? Landscaping companies.
Okay.
And just by doing something stupid and simple by instead of invoicing people and going through that work, she just puts them on monthly subscriptions, you know, and it goes and does the lawn and it does the this and it's just simple. And I'm going, the fact that local business people even have to be told that, like that's how far behind everybody is.
Sure.
You know? And so when I hear you say that, you know, they're great at whatever, they're just not good business people. I feel like there's so much opportunity in local markets for people. Like I look at it all the time and go, I could kill it with that. I just don't have the time. And it's just like, I'm not going to put my time towards that right now when I have so many other things going on. But if I did, I'd be going after these companies and being like, hey, you know what? I'm going to put you on a salary, Mr. Owner. You're still going to, you know, whatever. But like, you know, one of your main fears right now is, you know, do you have enough revenue? During this time of the year, you're broke. Because during this time of the year, when you kill it, you go to the casino afterwards and you go crazy and you're terrible. I'm going to put you on a salary where every week you're going to get this and whatever. And I'm going to take over the systems, processes. We're going to do the hiring. We're going to do the whatever. I feel like there are so many businesses locally where you could kill it taking that over by taking their skill,
sure,
the skilled labor,
yep,
and then putting the business acumen behind it.
Yeah, I agree.
You ever thought about it?
I see it in the martial arts world. There's a lot of great martial arts instructors, but they're horrible business people, you know? So they get into the, they put them on the mat, they're teaching well, but you know what? They're not following up with, you know, students, they're not making calls, and the business side just suffers, you know? So, and then there's the opposite where they're crappy martial artists, but great business people. So it's very rare you can find a mixture of something.
Oh, dude, it's so rare. You know? For me, it's like, it's the difference between, we find that in, when it comes to great real estate people being coaches. Mm. You know, it's like great athletes a lot of times aren't great coaches. You know, what does Jordan tell everybody? Jump over everybody? Mm. You know what I mean? Where a lot of times you find the people who weren't fantastic at it are actually the people who are great at fundamentals. So when you can find that rare ability of somebody who says, hey, I killed it in real estate. Like, I was an absolute top producer. I was whatever. But I also have the ability to break it up step by step, teach you how to do it, train you how to do it, hold you accountable. That is such a rare combination that when you find it, for us at least, when it comes to like hiring coaches, that's the difficulty in finding coaches, is that most of the time, 99 out of 100 we get are people who apply to be a coach. They are failed life coaches who need a revenue stream.
Sure.
You know?
So, those are the people you introduced me to before?
Yes. I mean, that's, you know, yeah. But it's the truth that they are, though, you know? And it's like, oh, God, here's another one. Oh, my God, here's another one. So when you find that rare, they're like, no, I'm killing it. I'm good at this. I'm whatever. But I'm also a teacher. I'm also whatever. That is the gold for us. And what you find is that that's not just real estate. Like, that's everything. Yeah. That's in every business you look at. That's in every sport you look at. Yeah. That's in every – it's that rare ability to kind of do both.
Yeah. Honestly, that's a life lesson that I've – you know, people that are selling insurance, financial wisdom, you know, the sad part is, you know, why am I going to listen to you if you're not as successful as I am?
Oh, dude, don't even get me. Yeah.
It does drive me a little nuts sometimes because
– what are you going to teach me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't been where I haven't been, at least, you know, I mean, it sounds conceited, but that's reality.
You know?
How are you going to teach me to go to a place you've never been?
No. And by the way, so I think, believe me, man, I struggle with this. I think about this back and forth because there are times when we have coaches who have not gone to this place who are training these people and train them amazingly.
Yeah.
Because there's a playbook.
Sure.
There's a manual for it, and their gift is teaching. Their gift is not, you know, so I always struggle with that because I'm the same way. I'm like, well, wait, don't you have to, you know, whatever. But then you start to think about it, and you go, I'm thinking of a coach right now, like in the NBA who never won a title, never won a scoring title, never won, and he's coaching people right now who are winning scoring titles, winning NBA champ, winning. He just didn't have the God-given ability, but he knew how to do it.
Sure.
And then you get people who have the God-given ability and squander it and don't ever get the most out of their potential. So there is another side to that where I agree, you do, there is a lot of truth in the idea of, you know, you can't lead people to a place you haven't been. There's also the more, because I'm a thinker, if you really want to break it down, there's also some lack of truth in it. It's like, no, there are people who could do that. They absolutely could. That's what process is. Mm. You know, that's why the failure rate on franchises is so much less than the failure rate on just trying it yourself. Because the franchise comes out and goes, hey, and they hire some franchise manager who doesn't do what you do, who comes out and goes, but here's the model. We're going to follow it. You're going to do this color. You're going to charge like this. Here's the POS system you're going to use. And they go right through everything. Here's the marketing we're going to do. And it works. Because the substitute for I've been there, you know, whatever, is here's the model. And that works as well. And then sometimes the person who has been there can't show you how to get there because they don't know how they did it. They were just gifted. You know, go ask Michael Jordan, how do you lead the league? How do you score 37 a game? You take a lot of shots. Most people can't stop you. So that argument can go both ways. You see what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
It's very simple to be like, it's like, yeah, but you also, a lot of times you can't lead people to a place you vote. So just like can't lead people to a place you haven't been, many people can't lead people to a place they have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
It's a rare exception. 9 out of 10 people will not be able to get you there. But there are those gifts, there's talents.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, that's why sometimes you can't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
You know, but if you give somebody the opportunity, you know, they have to prove themselves real quick because I'm not going to fork over all my hard-earned cash for
you. By the way, I look at that different. You know? When you start talking about a financial advisor, I look at that different.
Yeah.
That's a completely different thing to me. That is,
They show up in a jalopy.
Come on. I'm not even sure. Is that like an Italian
dessert? I don't know what that
dessert?
Is.
What is that, a jalopy?
A bad car.
It's not one that anyone here is driving.
Yeah. If I have a better car than you,
spokes.
We got problems.
It's just behind Spirit Airlines.
That's right.
They are not a sponsor.
I think I can.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. But anyway, the point is, yeah, I get it, man. I get it. Like, you want to have somebody who's been there, done that, done, yeah completely. What's next for you?
So I'm always, I would like to, you know, acquire more commercial pieces of property, honestly.
Are you looking now?
Yeah, I'm always looking. The market has definitely become harder to find deals mm-hmm. just because of the interest rates going up. And I think we're in this quandary where sellers are still demanding premium dollars, but banks are not allowing, you know, buyers to acquire those. So yep. I think we're kind of in that, you know, middle ground where I think in the next few months we're going to see hopefully prices come down a little bit. There's some rumors that interest rates might come down. I don't think they're coming down much. I think they're going to be pretty much where they are now. I mean, it might fluctuate a little bit. So, but yeah, I think, you know.
Have you positioned yourself to pounce if it does, or do you have to make moves to do that? Or like, what's your investment style, so to say? Like, I think it was Warren Buffett who talked about, like, if you look at the way he invests,
sure,
most of the time his money, most of the money he makes is by not investing.
Yeah.
You know, if you go look at his investments, sure, he will go a long time and buy nothing.
Yep.
I was literally just having this conversation with my son, and then all of a sudden, boom,
yeah, he got
pounce,
us. Yeah,
right? Yep. Like, I just had this with some, I do varied things, right? You could real estate, whatever, but like stocks as well. I just have kind of like a fun.
Yeah.
I don't gamble, so that's my gambling. It's just fun. I have a little account with a little bit of money in it, and I've got some stocks I watch, and I know, I've watched them for years now, and I know what they do. I've told you before.
Yeah, yeah.
I know where they fluctuate.
You know their pattern.
And I know exactly where they go down, and I know exactly where they go back to.
Sure.
And I will sit there, and like, my son has gotten really into this now, right? And we've got a custodial account, and he's investing now, and you know, and he just wants to buy. He's about to buy. And because he wants to make money. And I'm like, I agree with your wanting to make money. But sometimes the way you make money is by doing nothing. You just need to hold. You got to braveheart this thing. You know what I mean? Hold.
Yeah.
Hold. And I was doing this with him recently, and he was getting so frustrated. This is a true story. And then two of these stocks that I follow dropped to a level where I'm like, well, they're not staying there. And I pounced. And by pounced, I mean I put a significant amount of money into them. And I wrote him, and I texted him during the day. I wrote him, like, he's my, you know, like, this is a love letter, you know. My dearest son.
Well, you do write me a love letter.
Yeah, yeah. And I wrote him, and I said, just bought blank and just bought blank.
Sure.
His response, Dad, you loan me some money?
He wanted in.
He bought previous.
Yeah.
He couldn't hold, even though I kept telling him to hold, to hold, to hold. He bought when he shouldn't have bought.
Sure.
Okay. Since that time, this is about a week and a half ago, they're up 30-35%.
Wow, there you go.
If not more. Yeah. And they're going to continue to go up, right? The money you make many times is in the holding.
Sure.
It's in waiting for the actual opportunity and not allowing that urge to get the best of you, where I got to do something, right? Yeah. That same thing we talked about, action, activity. The opposite can work as well when you're talking about investing.
Yeah.
Sometimes the best thing you do is,
yeah,
let me just wait, hold. Hold, you know, it's that Braveheart type of thing, right?
No,
what's your strategy?
Yeah, I think, listen, you have to have discipline. You know, with real estate, honestly, I've always been of the mindset, slow and steady wins the race, delayed gratification. I'm of the mindset when you buy a particular piece of property, you most often make your money on the purchase, not on the sale. You know, so if you buy a good quality deal and the numbers work, you know, you're going to have a little, you know, runway. And, you know, through appreciation, through, you know, paying down the debt and some tax advantages, you're going to make out all right. But if you buy a property, you know, and you're immediately underwater, it's tough, you know.
Yeah.
So I have never found you can't really time the market, you know. You could see, you know, different trends and stuff. But if you're ready to purchase and you know you have a game plan and you got a good team behind you, I think, you know, it's just each individual deal is different. You know?
Yeah. So somebody said to me the other day, they're like, you know, Jared, is it a good time to buy? And I have a million answers for this.
Yeah.
I always say, is it ever a bad time to own?
Yeah.
I always say, like, you know, what's your goal? If it's long term, not short term, that it's always a good time.
Sure.
Short term is crypto and stocks, not that. Like when I give all these different answers, but they said to me, is it a good time to buy? And they brought up rates.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, well, I think you're confusing two things: good time to buy and a good time to refinance.
That's right.
Yeah. Those are two different things.
Yeah.
You know, and because the media and everybody puts it as the same thing. They're not the same thing. Just because they happen at the same time doesn't mean they're the same thing,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And so good time to buy, good time to refinance are two completely different things. Here's what I know for sure. If you don't buy right now, you're going to wish in a few years that you had bought several. Because you could always refinance that. When it becomes a good time to refinance, most of the time it's not a good time to buy. Like, it's like those things flip back and forth. And so you have to decide, am I an investor, am I a buyer, or am I a waiter? Do mm-hmm. I wait for the perfect storm? If you wait for the perfect storm, this is not what we're talking about. Buying and refinancing are two different things. Is it a good time to buy? Sure. The rate has nothing to do with that. That rate can change over time. That rate can be refinanced. But I do know that when you start to look towards the future, if I don't buy now, God knows I'd look back 5-10 years from now and say, I wish I bought 14 of those.
That's exactly right. Actually, that first two family I bought, I'll never forget, my interest rate was 7.5%. Yeah. And I mean, at the time, I thought that was a good rate. And yeah. then, as you know, interest rates plummeted. But yeah. right now, that's, you know, where it is right now, you know. So nobody, I don't think, can ever completely time the market, especially with their personal home. I always tell families, you know what, when you're ready to buy your personal family, you have to buy based on your family's needs.
Yeah.
You know, if you keep waiting for that market to come down or go up,
yeah.
you're going to be sitting on the sidelines. It's never going to work, you know.
Dude, I just had this conversation with someone about Apple stock. So Apple, yesterday, the government came after them for antitrust, a lawsuit. And their stock dropped by over $7. And I was talking to a friend, and I was like, "Well, you gonna buy now? Because that's whatever." And he's like, "I don't know. He's been talking about doing it for a while." And I'm like, "So what exactly are you waiting for?"
Sure.
So you thought it was too high here.
Yeah.
Okay. So then it drops, and you're like, "Well, no, that's not drop enough." So let's go to another scenario. If it affected their stock so much, it dropped by $60 today. Would you want to buy it then, or would you say, shoot, this thing's falling apart? And he's like, well, it's falling apart. And I'm like, well, then what situation makes you a buyer?
Mm.
You're not a buyer.
Yeah.
You're a thinker.
Yeah, sit on the side.
There is no situation where you think that you're actually going to move. If it stayed the same, it's not a good buy yet. Comes down a little bit, didn't come down enough. Comes down a lot, came down too much. It's risky now. This thing's falling apart. They're going to go Chapter 11. They're going to go whatever. There's no situation where you're a buyer. And so sometimes, just like we say, worst case scenario, people need to look at the situation they're in. They need to look at being an investor or being whatever, and they've got to stop and look at all the situations. And first, have an honest conversation with yourself. Am I an investor?
Mm.
Or am I a waiter who is telling myself, wait, I don't mean waiter like waiting service at a restaurant. Yeah. I mean waiter like, wait. No matter what happens, I'm never going to move. Because if that's the case, it doesn't matter what happens in the market. You need to first deal with whatever's going on inside of you. And you need to go to what we talked about before, that worst case scenario. And if you can't solve that, then you got to move on to something else because you're never going to do it.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the market, I love that because, you know, I was flipping houses and doing that during extremely hectic times in the market, you know, back 04, 05, 06, 07, 08, 09. And people were going, what are you doing? The market's terrible. And I'm like, the investment I'm doing, the market has nothing to do with it. I'm buying and selling in the exact same market. And I would say to them exactly what you just said. Mm. I'd say, I don't make money when I sell the property. I make money when I buy the property. Mm. If I buy the property wrong, it doesn't matter how I sell it. But if I buy the property right, the way that I'm taking them and turning them over in the amount of time that I am, the market that I buy in doesn't matter because I'm buying and selling in the exact same market, whether it's tremendous, whether it's terrible, whatever. I don't make money on the sale. I make money on the purchase.
That's right.
And that's the part that most people don't pay attention
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly. And we always say analysis paralysis. You know, if you're sitting on the sidelines, like you said, waiting for the market to go up, waiting for the market to go down, it's never going to happen.
What situation are you? Because if it got to a point where it's worth buying, you're going to think it fell apart.
That's right.
And if it doesn't get there, well, then it didn't go down far enough. And if it goes up, oh my God, well, I can't do it now. It was just there. I lost money. You didn't lose money. You never owned it.
Yeah.
That's like when you own a stock and it drops and they go, I just lost this much money. Did you sell?
Yeah.
No, then you didn't lose money. You lose when you sell.
That's right.
And that's a lesson I had to have with my son recently because he keeps calling me every day. My God, Dad, I lost $27. I lost $27. Yeah. And he's over there like, you know, some guy with a gambling
can I have a loan?
Casino.
Can I have a loan?
$27. I'm down $27. You know, he's over here like Rain Man. Definitely lost $27. Definitely lost $27. And I'm going, you sold? No. Then you didn't lose $27. Yeah. We're not in this for the next 12 hours.
That's right.
Braveheart.
That's right.
Hold. You're going to remember that forever now. I think of that all the time. Braveheart.
Yeah.
Hold, right? Anyway, I have a couple more questions for you. You got time?
I do.
I know you do because we're going to dinner together.
That's weird.
Yes, I didn't ask yet.
Maybe it is a love letter.
Yeah, exactly. That must have been the love letter you didn't read.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And you're paying. I'm just
typical
kidding.
You cheap bastard. Yeah.
I am not a cheap bastard. I am very giving and you know it.
All right.
Okay. All right. Couple of questions that it's weird asking you because I know you very well.
Sure.
Okay.
At least I make you think you do.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of quick ones. Number one,
What does your life look like in 20 years for you to be happy with your progress from where you are right now?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to – you asked me what made me buy my first two family, and you interrupted me, so I didn't get to finish my thought. So the first reason was, remember I said I had that old timer. He dropped the seed, and it kind of just stuck with me, so I figured real estate was good. But in the other – back of my brain, if you will, I knew I wanted to have a family. I knew, you know, I wanted my wife to stay home with our kids. That was, I just remember, you know, as a young 20-something, I thought that was important to me because honestly, growing up, I had that. My mom, was a stay-at-home mom, and I'm looking around in the world and I'm just, what's the secret sauce? And I did think, you know, having, you know, kids in a home environment, not having somebody else raise your kids, I thought that had value. Yeah. So I figured, hey, my 9-to-5 job is not going to be able to allow me to do that.
Yeah.
So I had to have some other investments, some other income streams to be able to do that. So I didn't know how that was going to turn out, but I do remember vividly that that was, you know, part of my strategy.
Yeah.
So yeah, going forward now, you know, being in my 40s, you being in your 30s, not.
Not yet. Yeah, no, I'm in my 40s as well.
But yeah, what's the next stage, you know? So I always try to, you know, think ahead. And yeah, the reality is, listen, I'm not doing this, you know, completely for myself, but you know, there's a little selfish part of me that wants to, you know, provide, you know, for myself, my family, but I'm thinking of my grandchildren already now and how I could set them up so they can have a little bit of an easier gig, you know, than I do financially. Not that I want to spoil them, but I want them to be thinking, you know, bigger picture, higher level stuff than I did, you know, at their, you know, position in life. So how can I, you know, set my kids up? You know,
start a new way of thinking and create new patterns. Yeah. Just like people create, you know, bad generational patterns where one's poor, the next one's poor, the next one's poor, one's a victim, the next one's a victim, the next one's a victim, one's whatever. You can do the opposite.
Correct.
And you're saying let's not anything bad against your parents or how you came up or anything, but it's like everybody wants their kids to go, you know, be better.
Sure.
And so that's your example of saying, you know, I'm gonna get better and I'm going to set them up to think different and then hopefully they'll take it even further than I do.
Yeah, exactly. It's that always that balance between blessing them and cursing them, you know, and in a sense of, you know, providing for them but not spoiling them where they're just like, hey, they take everything for granted and now you're creating, you know, just something that you don't necessarily want in society.
Jim, I think about this almost more than anything else. Mm. You know, I used to believe that you had to struggle in order to have drive and do well.
Sure.
But I see too many examples where that's not true. Everybody's struggle is different than someone else's. You know, there's an old line that says that everyone's worst day of their life is their worst day of their life. Everyone's biggest problem is their biggest problem. It's all relative.
Sure.
You know, 150 years ago, it was normal to lose a sibling. That was normal. One out of they die. Today, you got a D on your math.
Mm.
You know, to them, it's the same feeling.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? And so there's that saying, everyone's biggest issue is their biggest issue. Everyone's biggest problem they've ever faced is their biggest problem they faced. And so I don't buy into that anymore that you have to go through whatever. But I do constantly think of the idea of like, you know, how do I give them what I didn't have while also giving them what I do have?
Exactly.
Which is that drive.
That's right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I do that? And I think a lot of that is innate. DNA, genetic.
Sure. Yeah, nature versus nature.
I do think a lot of it's genetic. That way because when I look at my situation, I can pinpoint it. Like I, you know, so it makes me feel better about it. But man, I think about that probably more than you would ever all the time. Every time we go out to eat, if one of my kids does not say thank you,
it's a problem.
We're done. Yeah. We're not doing this right now. Like we're not going out for a long time. You just think that's normal? Like, and I know that's my own issue, but I'm like, that's not cool. That's not, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I think about that stuff because it's.
No, you have to be.
You provide what you can. Yeah. You work so hard so you can. But man.
Yep.
Yeah. They've not lived a life that I lived.
Correct. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I see it too. Like even in the business world, you see, you know, these self-made, you know, successful millionaires, billionaires, but their kids are just degenerates.
Ugh.
You know, like what caused that? You know, is it parenting? Is it, you know, too much resources? So yeah, you have to be, as you grow in life financially, you know, professionally, you got to be aware of what you are producing. You know,
Jim, we're lucky, man. Let's be very honest. Like you and I are lucky, man. We got good kids.
Oh, we got great kids.
We have great kids. Like, yeah, I mean, honest, like in all kidding aside, we have great kids.
Absolutely.
Like we have the kids that one day you hope your kid dates.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're, and I'm saying that, but it's just the truth. Like they're great kids. Like that's, we all, as a, you know, family, we all travel together. Yep. We love each other's kids. They're all upstanding. They're all extremely respectful. They're all, you know, whatever. Like we have, like, I mean, we got very lucky here. Like we have great kids. Yeah. And believe me, we know because we look out there and we see some stone cold bastards.
Well, like I'm looking at one.
Yeah. just kidding. You ruined the moment. But we have great kids. Now, on that note, what's your parenting style? So, and I, here's what I mean by that. When I say what's your parenting style, I meant that you have great kids, right? What do you think you've done well? Where do you think you've needed grace?
Sure.
You know, as you know, I went through a divorce a few years ago. Mm-hmm. What you find in a divorce is that we have completely different parenting styles, you know, that obviously clashed, you know, or meshed or melded when we were together, and you kind of hide it and you whatever. But once you're apart, you realize you have completely different parenting styles. I am much more of a, you need to figure some stuff out. I'm going to give you some leash.
Sure.
I don't mind you screwing up. I don't mind you messing up. You need that in order to learn. If I do everything for you, you're never going to be able to do it. I don't mind you having some freedom and figuring things out. I don't mind you making mistakes. There's a limit, but I'm going to let you kind of touch the stove. Let's see, right? What's your parenting style, and where? What do you think you've done well, and where do you think you need some grace?
Yeah, oh, great question. Jeez. I think when the kids were probably under 10, if you will, I enjoyed the dictatorship. In other words, you know, just in the martial art. Listen, I tell you to do something, you do it.
So true.
There's no questions asked. And then you get past 10, and we
you just look at them.
Yeah, we evolve into this, you know, democracy, this republic where there's conversation and there's questions. And I have to say,
how old are your kids?
Katie is 19 and Ryan is 17.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're teenagers now. But I have to say, I struggled with that period of time where just like, wait a minute, there's conversation. Just do what I tell you.
Hey,
know?
Who paid for all this?
Yeah.
Exactly. Who does what? Yeah. This isn't, I'm not asked. That wasn't a question.
Yeah. So, Sarah is definitely better at communicating, talking, building relationship. I've had to learn that, you know. We always joke in my family, I grew up with wolves, you know. My parents. They weren't, I mean, listen, they loved me. I know they loved me, but, you know, there was not much conversation. There was not a lot of emotion. I think I never saw my parents hug or kiss each other.
You spoke through woof.
Yeah, exactly. Woof, woof.
Roof.
Yeah. So it's something I've struggled with, you know, just as a dad, as a husband, you know, I need to do better in that area. Just being a little more vulnerable, being a little more emotional.
Do you wish that Sarah would listen more to your dictatorship?
You know what? She listens.
Listen, woman.
That's right. Yeah.
I done told you.
Yeah.
Like that. That okay. Yeah.
That didn't work out too well. Okay. I tried that year one.
Sarah.
That didn't work out.
We have a whole other place we could go to with that.
That's episode two.
Yeah. just so everybody knows, Sarah is like my sister. This is probably why. See, this is what I love about being in Connecticut. We have such a mixture of like we don't do like politics and everything, but like there's a lot of different things. We have beliefs all over the place.
Sure.
And Sarah is like a closet feminist, and not so closeted now. But I love, so like what I do is I don't care what someone believes, what they. I'm just gonna push and prod and have fun with it because I can always play the other side, whatever that is. I don't care if you're Jerry Falwell or you are, you know, whatever the opposite of Jerry Falwell is. Like whatever, I can play that. So I do that all the time with
poke,
Sarah.
Poke.
Oh, poke and prod
Jared loves.
Oh, I love it. It's the best, right? And so it's funny when you say that it's a dictatorship. It's the whatever. The truth is, your household is very much now become like a.
Democracy.
I feel you, man. Like I'm doing the same thing with my kids. We're going to dinner last night. I'm going, where you want to go? That one's do that. That one's want to do that. Well, guys, and now we're like learning problem solving. Whereas years ago, guys, get your stuff on. We're going to blank.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bang.
And I've also struggled and I'm learning. How do you influence your child to make the decision that you want them to arrive at?
You're literally hitting what I was about to say.
So, and oftentimes, you know, it'll occur, but it takes work and it takes effort. It takes conversation. And it's a skill set. Honestly, I have to say, I had to acquire, and I'm still not the best at it. My wife definitely is better at it.
Yeah.
One thing I think we did, we still do well, and I think, you know, it's one of the reasons our kids, I would like to think, are successful and, you know, good kids, is that we were always on the same page. So if we maybe had a different style or a different parenting approach, and we knew that we weren't going to be on the same page.
Very true.
You know, we would have a little sidebar, say, hey, listen, this is what we need to do. And we were united. The kids couldn't divide us. You know?
You are so right about, okay, so we've been joking, but the truth is our families are very close.
Sure.
And we joked about it, but it's true. Sarah does call me her brother, yeah. And I joke around with her as my sister. And yeah, when you guys get in your stuff, or she completely disagrees with you, and like we're at a thing,
sure.
Oh, she'll flat out she'll tell me,
yeah.
Like she's off to the side,
sure, yeah.
Being like, would you go talk to him? Like, would you go, you know, whatever? Yeah. But she won't do it in front of the kids.
Yeah,
you're 100% correct, yeah. About that. Like, yeah. She'll come over and she'll vent to me,
sure.
And be like, you know, whatever. She will not do it in front of the kids.
Yeah.
And you're right. I do respect that about you guys.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, most would use it as an opportunity to like gain favor with the children. Look, I'm with you on this. It's her, you know, or it's him, or it's whatever. You guys have done a nice job of like, we can talk behind the scenes. We can scream at each other behind the scenes. You know, I can show you what an 8th-degree black belt looks like.
That's right, yeah.
You know, although she's also a black belt.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, so that's a problem.
We have some fights.
Yeah.
Physical.
Yeah. Shut your mouth. But it's true, though. You guys, like you do, though, you're very good about keeping it, you know, in-house and not letting the kids see that and having that, you know, united front,
yeah.
Of you're not going to – it doesn't matter if I agree with each other. That's what your father said.
Yeah.
Or that's what your mom said and whatever. And there's something about that that's very old school, but also very smart.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So that's worked well. I think, you know what, having our kids, you know, through the martial arts world, I've been able to travel a lot, you know, nationally, internationally. And, you know, when our kids were younger, it'd be nothing. We'd be at a tournament in Dallas, Texas, you know, at a
yeah.
national tournament. Our kids are, you know, walking around, conversating with, you know, adults. So they can hang with their own. You know,
yeah.
We always get compliments. Man, your kids are like, talk like adults.
That's
you know?
The same thing. That's the same thing I hear all the time. About they talk to adults. Isn't it amazing the bar is so low? They talk to adults.
Yeah, exactly.
They use words.
Yeah, exactly.
They actually
yeah.
ask, how are you?
They make eye contact.
Oh, my
you know?
God. They shake their hand.
Yeah.
They, my God.
But, yeah, social skills, man. It's important. That emotional intelligence. So at a young age, I think, you know, they have acquired that. And you know, I think that gives you a little edge in life in these days, you know, having emotional intelligence.
Which one do you like better?
We can't tell you that.
There's no we here. It's just you.
No.
Who do you like better?
I am on camera.
Wink. All right. Another question.
Yeah.
This is kind of back onto the other thing, but I want to make sure I get this in here because I think it's important. A two-parter.
Sure.
Number one. If you wanted to, could you stop working at Lord Chamberlain?
I could, yeah.
Why don't you?
I think, you know what?
I think it's important for people to, like, why don't you?
Yeah, so actually.
Because you and I have talked about this.
Yeah, so I think, you know, listen, my father, I'll never forget, I was in college. My father was a blue collar, hard worker, you know, tool and die maker, you know, just worked. I mean, great worker. He was a manager of a tool shop in town and just a hard worker. And he ended up having a heart attack, you know, when he was in his 50s, you know, young guy. And I'll never forget, I was at school. My mom calls me, hey, your dad's in the hospital. And I walked into the hospital and my dad's on a gurney on the bed. And he looks at me and says, Jim, you know, I'm going to need your help, you know, financially, you know, helping out. He was so concerned about providing for his family, you know, and my father was a good wage earner, not a great saver. You know, I realized that later in life,
yeah.
You know, so he just didn't have good, you know, a money blueprint, you know, and so, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, you know, when you stop working, that's a big deal.
Dude.
For somebody trying to pay for their, you know, provide for their family. So that was a pivotal moment for me, you know, just, I think, you know, with that money blueprint, having a little safety security, a little money in the bank, knowing that if there was ever, you know, if I ever had a health issue or wasn't able to provide for my family or I lost my job, that, hey, I could still, you know, have a little runway. So I think that stuck with me. And I think that's still why I have like that safety net of working that 9 to 5, knowing that gives me a little
insurance,
courage,
money, yeah.
insurance that, hey, I could be a little riskier in other areas of my life. So
it's a safety net.
Yeah, safety net, I think.
Dude, it's so funny you say that. I vividly remember, it was when we lived in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in a duplex. We had moved on from a trailer.
Trailer.
Yeah. Mobile home. This is a true story. We then lived in a mobile home.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in a duplex, a rental. And I came home one day, and I was always my mother's security blanket in the sense that I was like her psychiatrist, in the sense she would tell me things, and I was always beyond my years. Like, I was always, I could handle
yeah.
it, right? And she was, like, laying in the corner, like, crying.
Mm.
And I'm like, what the heck is going on, right? Like, what's going on? And it was because she had gone to yet another job interview where they had turned her down because she was overqualified for an $8 an hour job. And she was crying and she said, I'm overqualified for this $8 an hour job and I'm not going to be able to pay the rent. You know, I just need a job. I just need, you know, whatever. And that always stuck with me of being in that position where somebody else can dictate whether you're underqualified, overqualified, whatever, but the ability to take care of your family, pay rent, what it was in somebody else's hands. And I just remember that sticking with me and just being like, yeah,
that's not going to be me.
That's not going to be me. That was literally what it went like with me. And that's not a shot or a down on my mom or anything like that. If anything, it was a teachable moment.
Sure.
She was doing the best she could. She was willing to work. She was willing to, she was in a new area. That's why we needed the job there. You know, there's a lot of reasons why we were over there. You know, the story for another day. You know, across the country from where we were. But that stuck in my head, you know, forever.
Yeah.
And to this day, I still think about it. And I go, nope, not going to be me.
Yeah.
Not going to be me. And to the point where, like I said earlier, not only not going to be me, but if someone else who's close to me is in that situation, I'm not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I remember seeing the helplessness in her face. And the panic.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me. Like, I remember looking at that going, oh God, like that's not a good thing right now.
Yeah.
That is, you know, it's amazing how those moments of emergency can create, you know, they're things that we would take away and yet they create the very thing that becomes the foundation of what makes us who we are.
Gives you drive.
The things you take away are actually what you needed.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
No, good point.
No, so I get it, man.
It was a part two.
What's that?
What was the part two?
What do you mean part two?
You said there was a two-part question.
I thought, oh, well, what was the first question I asked?
Something about what, you know, keeps you at your 9-to-5.
What keeps you at your 9-to-5?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a two-part. I said them both. I said, could you leave if you wanted to?
Yeah.
And what keeps you there?
Oh, okay.
And you answered very quickly, yes, I could. And then you went.
Okay.
You know, because of that question, there will not be a part two of this podcast. Okay. You will not contradict me on my show. Okay. God. All right. As we come to a close here, and I think I speak for the audience when I say thank God.
Is this a first close or a second close? Because you're known for multiple closes.
I'm not known. I'm not some preacher. I cannot close. You stop shaking your head, Tom. Okay. I will
Italian
send you home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen, one thing they don't tell you on a Virgin podcast, like, when's the restroom break? You know? I mean, my teeth are floating over here. All right. Number two is, what do you wear? I didn't know how to come dressed. All right.
That shows. Are you going to go work at the restaurant tonight?
Yes.
You know that I said we're going to go to dinner. Yeah. I didn't say you had to go work the restaurant because you look
like
you could bust some tables.
Number three, you know, is there makeup? You know, there was no makeup artist there.
Well,
know, so
there's no cameras on you.
Okay, good.
These are all for clips
you.
From me.
That's
this
what
is
I figured.
Yeah. That's what you're here for. I wish you asked more questions.
I know.
Because you just kept talking about your life, and I just kept thinking, come on, next. Yeah.
Number
next.
Four, was I being videoed, or is this just sound? You know, I don't know. But
I don't even think we started yet.
Okay, good.
This is the intro.
Right, good, good.
I don't think we started. Have we started, Tom?
Yeah, just.
No, I don't think we started.
I forgot to hit record.
Yeah, there you go.
Aborte.
God. I would like to end this podcast by challenging you to a duel.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see what those eight black belts do for you.
I am wearing a black belt today.
We know. You're ready. You're ready to go bust some tables. You're ready.
Yes.
Anyway, so in all seriousness, how can people find you?
Sure.
We fight about this all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. You have an account on one thing, and then another one, your Valley Karate.
Sure.
Can you just get an account under your name? What is wrong? Who are you running from?
So listen, I'm not running for anybody.
Okay.
You know, but I have to say, that is one thing I've learned from Jared James, you know.
Oh, wow. Two names. This ought to be interesting.
Yeah, Jared James. I am. Ed. Yeah. That is not your real name, by the way.
Just move on.
And anyway, listen, in today's crazy world, I've always been, I'm a private person, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I got the 9-to-5 job. I want to stay under the radar, man.
Yeah.
I don't want people knowing what I own,
yeah.
what I have. So I've had to adjust in life knowing that, hey, social media is a big importance.
Yeah.
We've owned the karate school for 20 years. We always had a website, but the website means nothing these days,
nothing.
Man. How do people find you? How do you engage? How do you interact with people? So, I mean, kudos to you. I have to say, you've challenged me in that particular area. I think I opened up my first Instagram account this year. All right.
Let's go.
All
what's
right,
your, what's
all right.
your Instagram account? What are you?
JimBurgers.com.
It's not .com. That's actually incorrect. Yeah. Is it at Jim Burgers?
Yeah, it's at Jim Burgers.
God, you just said .com. Let's fix this. Let's fix this real quick. Listen. Because it's not JimBurgers.com. That's a website.
Well, let me
it would be
here.
Incredible if it was, though.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I might actually change mine to be
TadDay23. I can't believe you just said .com. Jim.Burgers. Yeah. So J-I-M dot... B-E-R-G-E-R-S.
Correct.
Not burgers like you're eating it, but burgers, B-E-R-G-E-R-S. So
correct.
Jim, J-I-M, yep. J-I-M, yep. Dot Burgers.
Correct.
Is your Instagram?
It's my handle.
That's your handle? That's your handle.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Awesome. By the way, though, in all seriousness, like, so yeah, I have pushed you on this. And the reason I pushed you on this is you can't sit here and tell me how you locally meet everybody, network. You never know who God's going to bring in your path.
Yeah.
You never know whatever. And then it comes to social, and you're like, I'm not up in here.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Yeah.
This scales what it is that you are and who you are and what you do locally or whatever somebody's doing, you know, whatever it is, this scales that.
Yeah.
And that and you know this, like we joke around, but like I don't like attention. I told you I dread going to lobbies when I'm checking in a hotel or doing whatever. I hate attention. But at the end of the day, with what I do for a living, with what I'm called to do, with the influence I'm supposed to have, why would I not be using channels that allow me to do that, to put you in front of people, scale you when you're not even there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Honestly, Jim Burgers, businessman, business professional, that's definitely more of my comfort zone. So, you know, with the Valley Karate Instagram page, I'm a little more comfortable in that arena.
Yeah.
And you've challenged me personally that, you know what, Jim Burgers professionally, Jim Burgers martial artist, Jim Burgers, you know, the 9 to 5.
Funny
guy.
Man doing whatever. Yeah, Jim Burgers hanging out with us on vacation.
Yeah.
Jim Burgers going to a restaurant with Jared tonight. Jim Burgers, it's all.
It's all important, and it's relevant, you know.
Yeah.
So I need to do better as far as, you know, just being a little more available and put myself out there a little
bit. And you're always asking questions. Like every time we're together, you're always like, how's that? What's that? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, I think you're getting there.
Yeah.
It's a new reality for a lot of people trying to figure out what that looks like and why is it worth it and going against their initial feelings of, I don't want that. I don't want that attention. I don't want that. But there's that cognitive dissonance that occurs when on one hand you're saying, I don't want that. But on the other hand, you're saying, I want this.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, those two things are completely at odds with each other.
That's right.
I want to be in a great relationship, but I don't want to do what anybody else wants me to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's at odds, you know?
Exactly.
And so I want to do what it is that, that God's called me to do. I want to network with the right people. I want to have more opportunities. I want to be able to expand my, you know, whatever, for the sake of my children, whatever. But I don't want to be out in front of people in a way that happens in 2024 and beyond. Like there's a cognitive dissonance in there that has to be solved. That, credit to you, you are now solving and saying, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense the way that I'm saying this makes sense.
Correct. Yeah. And similar to this podcast, you said when I post, I should have no expectations.
Yes. Yeah. That is something I told you. I said post with no expectations.
Exactly. Yeah.
I almost feel like we should do a part two at some point and just like go through your journey as a social person.
Yeah.
Like, just getting you. God. That would be, honestly, I think that would be super interesting for people. Like, where we just sit here and do like a social one, like where you're coming from a place going, I don't even know what to post.
Exactly.
I don't know what to do.
Yep.
And let's just turn the tables and start interviewing and doing and saying, what do I do here? How do I come up with that? What do I post? When does that happen? When does, you know, whatever. Maybe we'll do a part two. If you guys want a part two with that kind of a thing, do me a favor, just comment below and just say, yes, we want a part two, or do something like that and just let us know you do. But do me a favor, go follow my buddy here, Jim Burgers, Jim.Burgers. Give him a hello. You know, it's scary. You know, it's funny, but it's scary coming on a podcast when you don't know anybody, you don't know anything. And, you know, you're going to have people that see you and see us joking around. And, you know, there's no format around it. You know, what's the script? What's the, you know, whatever. And so, guys, go follow him. Give him some encouragement. If you love this episode, let him know. If you didn't, leave him alone. He's a brittle man.
Brittle weak man over here. Give me a deuce.
Anything you want to say as your final words?
Yeah, no, listen, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, I have to say we've known each other for a long time, but I'm a firm believer that you know, iron sharpens iron, if you will. It's a little cliche, but you have stuff that you've been pushing me in directions that I'm uncomfortable, and hopefully I've been able to give you some advice.
Not yet.
Nothing.
Not yet. Not yet.
Oh, man.
You, what do they call that at the dojong? Yeah, whatever. What would you call it? Is you are my pupil?
Yeah, you, I know you are my.
You are my
student.
Bug under my foot. What would be the?
Wax on, wax off.
I'm just playing, everybody. Everybody, thank you for watching this episode. We love you guys. Make sure you subscribe, give us a great review, and say hello to Jim here. Make him feel comfortable about being here, guys. We'll see you on the next episode. See you soon.
Thanks so much for listening. Please take a moment and go to www.connectwithjared.com to connect with Jared James on all the platforms you are active on. And please remember to subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you are listening on if you enjoyed the podcast.